like to call to order the afternoon session of the Goleta City Council. Will you join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, now we have the fun duty, if you will, of giving a proclamation.
We got to start with rolls.
Oh, we do need roll. Okay, just in case, if you would, Sir Kutaya.
I think we're all here.
Councilmember Aceves?
Here.
Councilmember Bennett?
Here.
Councilmember Perotti?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo?
Here.
Mayor Farr?
Here. Well, Ms. Perotti tells me that I need to have a word with the city attorney about our closed session. Is there a report out of that?
Yes, Mayor. Just to let the public know, the council did meet in closed session earlier today, conference with legal counsel on anticipated litigation and public employee performance evaluation. No reportable action was taken on those, and those items are being continued onto this afternoon's agenda.
All right. Thank you. We do have a speaker as part of our public forum. Larry Thompson is going to speak about aerial firefighting, if you would.
Thank you, Mayor Farr and Council. I survived the T fire with 100-foot high flames, and one helicopter passed, put it out, a bigger fire than Hezacita would have been at the very beginning. I've been working with County Fire and more recently Sheriff's Air Support Unit to help put a fire helicopter in the South Coast to save at least 20 minutes of response time, to get on our fires quicker and not be waiting. In some cases, we've had to wait much longer. We exonerate the fire department and all that they do, but we think that this would be a very prudent thing for the South Coast to do with $50 billion or whatever amount of assets we have here to protect. We have a fire unit that has passed a competitive bid process, who's based in Santa Barbara County. And we've been in liaison with, he and his crew have been down here. They have talked with Chief Peterson. Chief Peterson has given us a letter of support, as we are supported in concept by the Montecito and Riviera Associations, Westmont College, and we're talking to many other people as well. But what I'm here today to ask is, would this be a good idea? Would Goleta think, gee, if we're not paying anything for this, would it be a nice idea to have a helicopter right here in case a fire comes up? And anything that would say, and with any questions asked, we would like to enjoy your support going forward to raise funds in the public, to say that, yes, here we have several communities, and we're talking to Carpinteria tonight. Going forward, we've given you a two-page summary of the project, and it is a special two-engine helicopter that's required because we're not publicly funded. We've been in contact with CAL FIRE and many other state agencies as well, and we simply would ask the question, if we can do this, would this be agreeable and a benefit to Goleta as well as Carpinteria and other communities in the South Coast?
Are we permitted to nod our heads on that?
You can ask for clarification or nod your head.
Clarification?
Yeah.
From Ms. Green?
No, from the Speaker.
As to what he's looking for? If you would,
simply a vote of support or not support, that you support the idea of the project, no financial request is involved. Is this something that sounds like it would be beneficial to Goleta?
Okay, well, I'm always brought up short when I take the lead on that, so let me look down here to the brain trust.
Mr. Mayor and council members, I think our city attorney and I agree that since this item was not agendized on today's agenda for council to make a decision, you would not be able to take a vote today, unfortunately, but certainly this could come back on a future agenda if it's something that you would like to have a chance to vote on.
All right. You see, that's how tricky it is. But why don't you contact Ms. Green and get it agendized?
Yes. No, yeah. I expect that some process would be involved in this.
Yeah.
I've been involved in state process, which is even more lengthy. But thank you for your time. At least we have it on the table, and I would hope to hear any comments or questions in the interim.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Thank you for your efforts. Now, are there any amendments or adjustments to the agenda?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, council members, we do have an amendment, item B7 on your consent calendar. We have had to make a clarification on page one of the staff report. We've provided each of you with a copy of the amended report, and I'll just call to your attention the amended language is at the bottom of page one, the very last line there. It should now read, the amendment will also reflect an FTE motor officer, which was restored in fiscal year 2011-12, but was not reflected in Exhibit A1 of the 2012 agreement, attachment one.
So. Very good, thank you. Now, before we do the consent calendar and our presentation, we have a baby here amongst us, and that's a very rare thing. We get anybody so innocent in here. Can you hold that little baby up so we can see how precious it is?
He's asleep.
There it is. Ah, sweet. All right. Well, thank you for that.
I would pay good money if he spit up on the back of Luke's shirt right there. I would.
Okay. We have a proclamation to be given here. Mr. Kutaya, would you read this off? And we're going to have my speedy assistant here, the Mayor Pro Tem, Tony Vallejo, will be giving his proclamation. If you would read it, Mr. Kutaya.
Item A1, proclamation recognizing the celebration of the 50th anniversary of Dos Pueblos High School.
All right. Who's going to be receiving this proclamation?
I wouldn't take it personally, but I want to take my picture. They've taken too many. Well, good to see you again, Sean.
Good to see you. Thank you for having us.
This is so much easier than last year when my son was a senior at DP, because now I don't have to worry about you coming here to tell me what he did wrong. Now I have to wait. Oh, boy, he must have paid a lot of money for that one. But, okay, well, I'm going to read this proclamation with all the whereases, and then I don't know, I'm assuming that all these kids in DP shirts are part of the group. I don't know if you want to bring them up for the picture or anything like that.
All right.
Bring them up now.
Right. Come on up, everybody. Administrators also.
Everybody.
Around,
yeah, absolutely. I'm sure they all wanted to come up here, so I can tell how excited they are. Fill in behind us, too, everybody. We've got to make sure we all get in the picture and all around. Don't stand in front of me. You're all too tall. They won't be able to see me. Yeah, he's the one that has to be in the picture, for goodness sake. Okay. All right. A proclamation from the City Council of the City of Goleta, California, honoring Dos Pueblos High School for its 50th anniversary. Whereas Dos Pueblos High School was founded in 1966 and opened its doors on its present 40-acre site to 1,029 students and 63 faculty members on April 3rd, 1967. Whereas over the span... I was just hoping it was the baby. Whereas over the span of its 50 years in existence as a school, Dos Pueblos High School has been designated a California Distinguished School in 1988 and 1998, a National Blue Ribbon School in the year 2000, and received multiple full terms of accreditation from the Western Association of Schools and Colleges. And whereas Dos Pueblos High School is annually celebrated for superior academic performance as reflected by its proportion of National Merit Scholars, Presidential Scholars, CIF Academic Championship titles, Advanced Placement in International Baccalaureate, exam passage rates, standardized test score results, as well as graduation and college going rates, and whereas Dos Pueblos is an innovative school that offers the prestigious International Baccalaureate program and established the world-renowned Dos Pueblos Engineering Academy, as well as the Academy for Success, And whereas Dos Pueblos enjoys a reputation for sustaining a highly engaging and student-centered culture with robust and accomplished co-curricular programs including athletics, visual and performing arts, and career technical education pathways. And whereas, throughout its 50 years of existence, Dos Pueblos High School has continued to shine as a source of pride for the city of Goleta. Now therefore be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Goleta, California, does hereby congratulate and commend Dos Pueblos High School upon its 50th anniversary, approved this 18th day of October, 2016. Yay! Congratulations. Now, everybody, come in. You should hold this. It's your certificate.
So can we have our both eyes come between this fire and the cigar?
Where do you want? All right.
Unless y'all want to
And everybody, screw chin, want you on the picture.
You cannot stand behind the pole. Okay, are we ready? Yeah, go try it. 1, 2, 3. I'll take a few here. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
No capper next there.
Well, there we were looking at the best and the brightest, you know. And frankly, I love to brag to the rest of the South Coast how we have the best high school here. So you guys are doing great. I'm sorry, are you going to address us now? Good, please.
I just say, hear, hear. As the very proud principal and on behalf of Dos Pueblos High School, I'm honored, Mr. Mayor and city staff and council members, to accept this proclamation and receive this proclamation, highlighting really what you said, Mr. Mayor, that Dos Pueblos is a, I know many of you have personal connections to DP, and so you know that it's a uniquely high-achieving and student-centered school and school community. We have many of those students with us today and some staff members as well. I do also just want to publicly appreciate that in a community like Goleta, that we at DP strive to exemplify the values of this community through an emphasis on education and diversity, innovation, and community. I think that we do a good job of that every day, and we are always striving to do better. I want to thank you for your partnership over the years, certainly the partnership and support of our local businesses. And in turn, we try to turn out graduates to you. There are many graduates who stay in the Goleta area and continue to work in our industries and in the public sector. And so I just appreciate that and look forward to that being a sustaining pattern, a sustainable pattern in the years ahead, in the next 50 years. And then finally, I want to just remind everyone of some things. The first is that our 50th anniversary and the celebrating of it is set against the backdrop of the Santa Barbara Unified School District's commemoration of 150 years this same year. And also that we have several events coming up this weekend, which is our homecoming weekend, to celebrate this milestone for our school. The first is that we have our homecoming game, football game, on Friday. That is against our crosstown rival, Santa Barbara. And we have all kinds of pregame festivities. You can tour the campus. Anybody who's listening now or watching at home can just know that our campus will be open from 3 o'clock on that day for tours and things like that. We'll have a parade of former homecoming kings and queens and some special entertainment before the game. And then we'll be using some of our Hall of Fame inductees to help us kick the game off. We'll be formally recognizing all 15 of our inaugural Hall of Fame inductees at a gala event at the Glendaling Golf Course on Saturday. So tickets for these events and more information about them is available on our school's website. Or if you don't have online access and you're watching at home, you can always call the school and we'll help you out over the phone. So thank you again very much for your time and attention. We're very proud and look forward to continuing to work with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Now, the football team's very good this year, right?
The football team is very good this year.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to crush the Dons. Oh, yeah? Let's see some hands there if you play ball, play football.
Oh, there you go.
All right.
Why aren't they at practice?
All okay. Right. Now, the question is, are there any council members who want to say something?
I do.
Okay. Please.
Your 50th anniversary is real special for me, even though I didn't go to Dos Pueblos High School. I graduated from Pasadena High School. but it was 1966. And my class reunion was just a week ago. So that particular year is very special in my life and one that I don't forget easily, of course. And so for the rest of you, as you move forward in your adult life, when you reach your 50th class reunion, it too will be a very, very special time, and it's something that you can look back on as something that was so very important in your life. So do well in school, work hard, have fun, and enjoy the experience. Thank you.
All right. Ms. Perotti.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, I just wanted to congratulate Dos Pueblos High School. I can remember a time when my oldest daughter was in elementary school, and there was talk about closing the high school. I'm so glad that didn't happen. It's such an incredible school. Both my daughters graduated from DP and did extremely well there. And congratulations. Good luck for the next 50 years. And I look forward to going to some of the events.
Yeah. Council Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo, please.
Well, like I mentioned, my son just graduated from DP last year, and I just want to thank you guys again. It was an amazing experience for us. Thomas probably won't admit it because, you know, it's school, but he enjoyed himself there, and we had a certain, there's a lot of calmness in our house because we knew he was in good hands every day, and he learned a lot. He's at City College now, and he's enjoying the experience, but mostly because he had a good experience in high school. So please tell all your staff that they're amazing. We didn't have one bad experience in the 4 years we were there with anybody on the staff especially, and just thank you again for taking care of my kid for 4 years. I really appreciate it.
Council Member Aceves.
Thank you. Well, I have the honor of serving on the foundation board for Dos Pueblos High School. And what's remarkable that happened this year, not only getting this event started, but was getting the alumni together and recommunicating with all of those that went to school and kind of have not been updated with what's been happening on campus. And now they get updates and they see that the successes continue. I think the alumni list is now close to 1,000. Is it close to 1,000 alumnus are now communicating either on Facebook or by email. I'm looking forward to the game. You know, my son did graduate from DP. I graduated from Santa Barbara High School, but I will be sitting on the DP side this week. So I have a great game and look forward to the rest of the activities. And it doesn't stop there. Let's go on to future recognition for the school. And it's not only the students, but the incredible staff you have. I mean, they step out. I mean, you think about how teachers are underpaid, underrecognized, but you wouldn't see that at DP. They're all so involved, not only the sports staff, but the education staff, and how involved they are with the students. And that's why they have such a high success rate as far as students going on to college. And that's shown every single year, and that's something to be very proud of. So congratulations on your 50th.
Yeah.
Do you want to say something more?
I don't think so.
I thought you were over your mic.
Go Chargers.
Go Chargers indeed. Michelle, did you have anything to say?
It's open mic night tonight, apparently.
I don't typically speak at these moments, but I do want to acknowledge that I have a daughter at Dos Pueblos, too, a sophomore. She loves it there. She's in the Engineering Academy. Didn't think that was the direction she was going, and when she got in, we were really thrilled, and she loves it. So I really appreciate that program and everything all the staff do at the high school to make it such a great place for our kids.
Well, we're all obviously delighted to have you folks to be sharing this city with you. You guys are doing a great job, so thank you for that. And this is among the more pleasant things we do up here. Some things are rather contentious, particularly with my fractious fellow council members. But anyway, it's great to have you out there acquitting yourself in such a handsome fashion. So thank you for that.
No. Oh. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Yep. Okay, we'll give you a moment to vacate here. It only hurts our feelings a little bit that you're leaving. All right. Now, if we can, we'll move to the consent calendar. Mr. Kutaya.
Item B1, approval of the City Council meeting minutes of September 20th, 2016. Item B2, acceptance of the September 2016 check register. Item B3, proposed ordinance adopting the 2016 California Building Standard Codes by reference. Conduct the second reading by title only and waive further reading and adopt Ordinance 60 next in order entitled An Ordinance of the City Council of the City of Goleta, California, amending Title 15, Buildings and Construction of the Goleta Municipal Code, adopting by reference the California State Building Codes and other related codes, adopting local revisions to those codes, adding Chapter 15.15 entitled Energy Code, Chapter 15.16 entitled Historical Building Code, Chapter 15.17 entitled Existing Building Code, and Chapter 15.18 entitled Reference Standards, Codes, and Repealing Ordinance 1305. Item B4, award of contract for professional services to conduct a development impact fee study. Item B5, amendment number 2 to the Professional Design Services Agreement with Drake Hagelin and Associates, Inc. for the Hollister Avenue Class 1 bike path. Item B6, amendment number 5 to the Equal Street and Fowler Road Extensions Project Design Services Contract with Drake Hagelin and Associates. Item B7, contract amendment number 1 to agreement 2012-079 for law enforcement services with the County of Santa Barbara. And item B8, approval of the striping plan for Patterson Avenue at Highway 101 for the Cavaletto Tree Farm subdivision.
All right. Now, are there any of these consent calendar items that a council member would like to pull?
B8.
B8, if you pull that. So, is there a...
Are there any speaker slips?
I'm sorry?
Are there any speaker slips on this?
No.
Then I move approval of 1 through 7.
Second.
Okay, all those in favor of items 1 through 7 on the consent calendar, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Passes unanimously. All right, Councilmember Aceves, would you like to comment on B8?
Well, I would appreciate a staff presentation on this. This has been an intersection that I have received numerous complaints through the years, and the biggest problem is that the intersection is controlled by Caltrans, county, city, and one of the biggest complaints is a backup from Cai Real going eastbound to come on to Patterson. So the staff report, I really couldn't see the diagram as clearly as I would have liked to, but I really would appreciate for my education a presentation as to what exactly is being proposed and then a more visual look at it.
All right. Ms. Milan, okay, and Ms. Gaglione, please.
Thank you, Mayor Farr, members of the council. So two things. Some of the previous problems there that have been reported, there were some software glitches and some timing things that that we worked along with the county and Caltrans to get the bugs out of that. So hopefully those are working as they should at this time. I'm going to have Marty Milan go over the striping changes as they relate to this particular development.
Good afternoon, council members and Mayor Farr. The as mentioned, this is associated with the Cavaletto Tree Farm subdivision. Property north of the freeway and Calle Real on just off of Patterson Avenue. This project is actually in the county. As a part of the county processing and approval, the subdivision had certain impacts that impact the city of Goleta, primarily the traffic coming off of the site would go to the Patterson Avenue on and off ramps. And as we are aware, there are backup issues in this area. This is a cumulative impact to the overall, and it was determined through that process that a restripe would facilitate improving the traffic flow associated with the subdivision. Currently, the project is at 133 units, primarily single-family dwellings in different fashions, some of them standing alone, some of them clustered, and some of them townhomes, as well as apparently there is a portion of it that is a multi-unit family situation, but although they call them apartments currently, they are available for sale at any point in the future at the developer's discretion. They were approved essentially as condominiums. So this project, as it was approved, was conditioned through the process with working with the County of Santa Barbara to provide for some restriping that would alleviate some of the backup issues on Patterson for the southbound on-ramp. This essentially is the existing configuration where there is only one left turn lane that allows traffic to get onto the southbound on-ramp to Highway 101. Because it's only one turn lane, there's limited capacity, and this project will impact that. Currently now we experience that it does back up almost through the intersection, and sometimes it can affect Calle Real with the signal timing between the two at peak times of the day. So,
how do I click to the next one?
Okay. So, not as pretty a picture as the existing overall, but what this project will do is create two left turn pockets that will allow traffic to enter onto the southbound Highway 101 ramps. It will actually demark and extend the left turn pocket that goes northbound on ramp. There are some transition things that need to happen in order to facilitate this additional left turn lane. And then next, is that one? This is an overlay that kind of, it's not as clear as I would have liked, but it shows again on the aerial how these two left turn lanes, the new lane that's being created, the southbound on Patterson to go onto the southbound US of 101, and I know that sounds strange, my apologies. So we are maintaining on this. This is the existing cross section existing is up top, yes. So we have an existing sidewalk on both sides, we have bike lanes on both sides. We have two through lanes, a left turn lane. This looks odd, but it is indeed, as it is configured, it's at the same location where I'm showing you the new cross section. As you're going northbound, it is a left, it's kind of where as you cross the intersection, it turns into a left turn lane and a through lane. So it is very wide there, but that is how it is existing striping looks. And I can show you in the aerial, the striping for the left turn lane to go northbound onto the highway is about mid-bridge, whereas now it'll be down here by the ramps. So that is why this area here is so wide. The traffic, the single lane coming north, goes to either direction into the turn pocket and moves on. So the new configuration, what is happening is we're creating a second left turn lane. So we still have the sidewalks on both sides, bike lanes on both sides, slightly reduced in width. The through lane goes from essentially a very wide, generous 13-foot lane to an 11-foot lane, and another 11-foot lane that goes through. These are southbound on Patterson. And then you have the two southbound left turn lanes. And then you have we actually bring the demarcation for the northbound left turn lane further down toward the intersection, and then you have the two through lanes, north bike lane and the sidewalk. So essentially, by reducing the lane widths that were up above, we were able to create an additional left turn lane as an interim measure to improve the traffic flow in this area.
Okay. Were there any proposed changes to the intersection of Patterson and Kyriel?
Not associated with this particular project.
But they have to get through there to get to the freeway.
But the primary movement into that intersection is not from the southbound lanes coming into the intersection. It's the people that are coming along Calle Real and making the maneuver to get onto the freeway. So the project's impacts were actually minor, and what their impact, there would be no nexus to improving that particular flow through in that intersection because it doesn't back up on the leg on the north side of that intersection. The backup is coming from our the city of Goleta's area, where it's because we're coming from a commercial area and a lot of residential are using that as an access to get to the freeway.
Okay.
So their project really doesn't impact that intersection in that fashion.
And that would hold true as long as the lights are properly timed.
It seems to, as long as we can keep those lights synced with one another, which is done through timing, not through a conduited or connected interconnect system, yes, they seem to function as best they can.
And what if it doesn't? That's my final question. What if? I mean, we get one chance through mitigation to improve the traffic flow.
Well, technically,
we're assuming that the portion that's most impacted for us is that intersection and the bridge. But speaking of the intersection specifically, with no modifications proposed, what if the traffic signalization is not sufficient?
The burden with this one is the fact that Calle Real and Patterson, the intersection in quite a ways, almost towards Maravilla at the fire station, is all in the county of Santa Barbara. So we do not have the authority to, and nor do we have the opportunity any longer because the project is approved, to make changes to the Calle Real-Patterson intersection. I believe that if there was a concern with that, then the opportunity would be for the city to be talking to the county with regards to improvements. So far, we have not seen any backups from that intersection at Calle Real and Patterson that actually get into the city of Goleta. The decision about the improvements to that intersection were made by county staff and the Board of Supervisors and the project approval.
And county staff without our participation.
We did review the traffic study. We reviewed it for the impacts that hit the city of Goleta.
Okay. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo.
Yeah, just a quick question. So we're greatly improving the capacity for those two left turn lanes onto the 101 South, right? So what's the current capacity and what are we changing it to as far as like number of cars we think can queue up there? Do we have a number for that?
I do not have the traffic study with me, and I honestly do not recall the specific numbers.
Okay.
I won't say it's doubled.
I would think it is, though, probably,
right? It would seem that way.
Yeah.
It's probably close.
Okay.
If I could, I would also like to interject that increased capacity there will improve, as a side note, the intersection of Calle Real and Patterson,
yeah, we'll
because more cars will clear out of mm-hmm. off of Calle Real and be allowed to get up into the queue to facilitate the use of the signalization.
I agree. I've been stuck where I couldn't cross that intersection because I knew I'd be in the intersection before the lights changed, so that would help too. You're right.
Well, and then you see the boulder of the people just lagging their cars out in the middle of the intersection mm-hmm. waiting for the lights to change. I have been in that mess for a long period of time. Okay, Ms. Perotti.
My question is really quick and simple, but I'm glad to see the sidewalks will remain and the bike routes. Will you be painting the green? Because will this be any new lanes? And will there be green? Because aren't we, whenever we make some kind of improvements to roadways, we've kind of, it's been suggested that then the bike lanes will be updated to the green lanes.
We are looking at the green paint on a case-by-case basis. I think when this agreement was made, though, the green paint wasn't included back in 2012. But that is something we can add in this area. Mm-hmm. I think in the high volume locations, it is really nice to get folks' attention.
Yeah, and do we have, maybe we should have a policy for that, for when the green lanes, or do we already have Are you being directed to like anything new? Then they get the green light. And what's your process for
right now? It
that?
Isn't anything new, and there isn't a specific policy because it's expensive. We've been looking at volumes of traffic or areas where things tend to kind of blend together, mm-hmm. and that we really need something to catch folks' attention. At any time, obviously, the council and city manager want to discuss a policy for green lanes, we can do that. But right now, we're just looking at wherever there's high volumes of traffic, and we have another project going or making improvements that we are doing that. So we would, I believe, put this on a list to get okay. green paint.
Good, because I would think it's going to be high volumes of traffic.
Yes.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Bennett? No? Okay, well, let me... When I was first elected here about 4 years ago, on my list of things that I thought should be done, it's somehow connecting Kyrial all the way out to Winchester Canyon. And actually, I was talking with Eric Onan about this. He says these storage units have actually encroached on the county's right to expand Kyrial through there. So anyway... As Gil Garcia pointed out many years ago, and it's no surprise to anybody who lives in this area, we have an urban grid on an agricultural area, and we have three east-west routes here. And if one of them goes down, the other will go to gridlock, you know. So I don't know what, if and when, Kyrial will ever be muscled through there. But I would think within the next 30 years, it would certainly behoove the people of Goleta to attempt that because it would facilitate 101 traffic, and Hollister 2 take some of that pounding traffic off of Old Town. And anyway, just a thought. It's been on my mind a long time, and whenever I get caught in that mess, I think about it. Well, but this is going to be a good improvement, so thank you. All right, anybody else have a word?
Move approval of staff recommendation.
Second.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No? Okay. It passes unanimously. Thank you, Ms. Gagliani. And Ms. Milan, thank you. All right, now do you wish to make approval of that one?
I think we just did, didn't we?
Sorry.
I can do it again.
Second.
Maybe we'll get a couple more lanes out of it. Okay, and now I think we're down to a discussion item here, if you would, Mr. Kudaya.
Item C1, Memorandum of Understanding with California Joint Powers Insurance Authority for an ADA assistance program.
Mayor, members of the council, the action that's before you today is an opportunity for the city to participate in a program that's put on by the California Joint Powers Insurance Authority for its members, and we are a member of that program to comply with the Americans with Disability Act. What the ADA requires for every jurisdiction is that you make a survey, a self-evaluation of all of your accessibility of all your programs and all of your projects and all of your facilities, and then that you come up with a transition plan to bring all of those into compliance. What we've learned since the ADA was adopted back in the 90s is that rather simple statement is much broader than anyone ever contemplated. And as you know, the city of Goleta was incorporated after the ADA was adopted, and this is one of the things that we as a relatively new city need to do is go through and look at all of our programs and projects and facilities. When we start talking about facilities, it's not just structures that the city owns, but it's also like this facility, a facility that the city leases but uses for its city business. When we start talking about facilities, the expectation is also with regard to streets and sidewalks and curbs and trails, and you start going further and further of all of the city right-of-way and everything that the city owns within the city, And pretty soon you realize this is a pretty big undertaking to inventory all of these facilities and come up with this list and find out what it is we need to do to come into compliance with the restrictions. And that's pretty cost prohibitive, and certainly the JPIA that we are a part of recognizes the importance of its jurisdictions complying with those standards and relieving not only the potential liability that could arise from people using facilities that are either substandard or do not have accessibility, but also some of the rather draconian penalties that could be available under this federal law. And so in order to encourage that and to reduce the burden, the CJPIA has put together a program where they contract with experts who are able to go out and conduct these surveys. They know all of the standards, and they can quickly move through a city and create this inventory, put it into a database, and provide it to the jurisdiction. By the JPIA entering into this contract on behalf of all of its members, it's able to get a much better pricing for those services. And then they also are stepping up to pay a portion of the price. For the work that would be done for the city of Goleta, the cost for the vendor would be $116,600, but the JPIA would be picking up $26,300 of that. So the city's out-of-pocket cost, what we're looking for, is $90,300. The document before you is just a memorandum of understanding to confirm our participation in this program with the CJPIA and our agreement that we would reimburse them for that cost that they would incur on our behalf. And as part of that, what happens is we do get this detailed inventory of all of our facilities. They give us a transition plan for us to come back and adopt and to work through and say, now how do we go from here to eventually getting everything into full and complete compliance, and you know, how do we pay for that, and how far out, how much time do we have to do that, and help us develop that plan, as well as providing us with a computerized system that our personnel can use and keep track of so that we can document as these changes are made and everything is brought into compliance. And again, it's also not only those physical things, but it's our programs. Like your meetings. We make sure that we have facilities for hearing accessibility. We make sure that we provide translation services. We make sure that this facility is open. And then if anybody needs an accommodation, that they have that. We put that out on every agenda. You'll see that kind of, it gets lost after you see so many agendas. But there's a notice there. If anybody needs an accommodation, we're willing to provide that. You see the same information on our website. That's a requirement as one of our programs. And we have a dedicated person who is working in my office, Ashley Flores, who is our dedicated ADA coordinator. And that's somebody that the public can contact if they need accommodations on these issues, and she can work with the proper staff to make sure that all of those needs are provided. So this program will help us to get into compliance and is by far and away the most economical method of accomplishing that. With that, staff's available for any questions you might have.
Mr. Bennett.
I asked some time ago when we were letting the contract for our annual sidewalk and curb gutter program, how many of the curb cuts have we made in the city and how many do we have left? I have yet to receive back that information at this point in time. So will this survey finally satisfy that particular request?
It will tell us how many curb cuts are still required to be done. It won't obviously tell us what's been done. It's a survey of the current situation, but I think that's information that Ms. Green will be able to obtain from the capital projects people that have been making those adjustments. We should be able to get you information on the work that's been done, but yes, this survey will tell us what work remains to be done on that project.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, Ms. Perotti.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple questions. One, have we ever heard, and so would it be up to the public to notify us to let us know if they need our meetings translated when they're watching them on television into Spanish. I know that, I think the city of Santa Barbara used to do that. I'm not sure if they still do that. Would there need to be a request, or have we ever, just a question, I'm just curious to whether there's a need, a desire to have that?
From the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act perspective, it would not consider an alternative language as being a disability. So it would fall under this this law. But as an accommodation, those are the types of things that we are responsive to and will listen to. I'm not aware of any requests being made. I don't know if Ms. Green's aware of anything else that's been requested in the past as well.
Thank you.
I'm not aware of any requests of city staff through the city clerk's office or my office for Spanish translation of our meetings.
Okay. I'm sorry, I just have one more quick question. So my understanding is that after this study is complete, it'll come to us to look at it, review, and then based on priorities, we'll start prioritizing what projects, because obviously there could be several and we need to prioritize which gets done first, and that's my understanding?
Yes, that's correct. There will be two documents that come out of this work effort that both need to have adoption by the council. The first is the self-evaluation. So it will bring back that survey, which just identifies where we are or what needs to be done. The second of those documents is how we're going to go about addressing all of those needs that are identified. And it is that very prioritization, allocations of funds, those kinds of issues that need to be addressed. That's part of the transition plan, and that's a plan that has to be adopted by the city council.
And just one more question, and this is just for publicly owned or public property, but they're not going to look at private property at all. And who, under whose jurisdiction is it to look at, say, a private area, like shopping centers and things like that?
It's always a property owner's responsibility to make sure that their property meets the accessibility laws. And so that there are overlaps. For instance, this facility we're in is privately owned, but yet we lease it. So it would fall under our responsibility as well. There's an independent obligation on the property owner to make sure that they're complying with accessibility laws. As projects go through the approval and plan check, building plan check process, that's one of the things that our building inspectors are looking for and making sure that as new construction comes on, that it complies with the current accessibility standards that are applicable for that project. So we will catch it at the outset. The obligations are different. Structures that are already in place or facilities that are already in place that are privately owned don't have the same won't have the same obligation to come current as a matter of time as the city would. If they go in and make modifications and make significant changes, that can require them then to come up to current standards. And again, that's something that would go through the city process. And as our building inspectors are going through their plan check, we'll be pointing out that new design would then need to meet current standards.
Okay, so if something were to become, I'm actually thinking of a piece of property over in Cai Real that made some changes to their ADA ramp. Did that have to come to us for approval first? They had a ramp, they decided to move the ramp and actually put in stairs, and now there's not a ramp. So did that have to come to us for approval? Who approved that?
Well, let me step back and say two things. One, it's beyond the scope of what we prepared for you today, and two, I'm not aware of the details of that specific project.
Okay.
It goes to, you know, how extensive a change is as to whether or not it's something that requires a city building permit. If it requires a city building permit, we will be reviewing it. We will be providing the information as to whether or not, and not every building permit would necessarily have the type of change that would require a property to become fully compliant. it's a much trickier issue when it comes to private property, and so it's difficult to give you a specific answer as to a project that I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, I didn't mean to put you on the spot there. I just always been curious about that one particular area, so we can talk about it later. Thank you.
Councilmember Aceves.
Yeah, just a couple things. First of all, regards to the translation of Spanish, that was a discussion we had when we first came on council, and there wasn't really a high express need. So we did at that time, if memory serves me right, we even had our Monarch Press translated in Spanish. But that fell because there wasn't people didn't ask for it. And after we made a decision to stop it for financial reasons because of expensive doing the Spanish translation, we never got any response back as far as, you know, bring it back. But the council did reserve the opportunity to translate big public meetings where we know the translation services are going to be needed. We hire people to come in with the headphones and everything. So that's always been the practice of the council. With regards to this particular program, the item before us today, as a member of the council's representative, the JPIA, I've known about this program. I'm really happy to see we're doing it. There aren't a lot of cities that are getting involved in just yet. I think we're kind of on the forefront, I think. So I'm excited we're doing this and partnering with the JPIA, because the other thing that this does is it JPIA recognizes that we're doing everything that that meets with their requirements, so that, because as you know, they're our insurance agent if something was to happen. So it's always nice to do it with their guidance. So I'll be glad to make the motion when the time is appropriate.
Would you hold that a second?
Yes, when it's appropriate.
I have a question or two as well.
Okay, go ahead.
Sure?
Yeah,
absolutely. All right. I didn't see it in here. Do we have a timeline for when they plan to start and how long it'll take and all that good stuff?
They've already started some of the work. We anticipate that at least the initial survey work will be completed in relatively short order. Then there's a need to put all of that information into the database. They've had some of the interviews with city staff with regard to programs and things that are in place. They've done reviews of our website and those kinds of things that are easy to be done off-site as well. So we're anticipating that initial step to be done relatively shortly. It'll be getting that computer program back with everything that's in it, and then sitting down and putting together all of the information we need to bring back for the transition. That's going to be the harder one, and we'll need to spend some time with them to come up with a proposal for you to look at. I'm anticipating that's something that should be handled in a few months, something probably shortly after the first of the year. We can certainly, as we get more information from the consultants after they have completed their survey and they know what they're dealing with, they'll be able to give us a clearer picture as to when they think they'll be ready to have something to present to you.
Okay, and then they're helping fund this survey, this study.
Yes.
For some of these projects, if there's liability issues, you think they'll help us fund those too?
There will be some opportunities depending on where we might have what they consider to be barrier removals. In other words, where there are specific areas where accessibility is completely denied.
Like curb cuts and things like that.
We need funding on certain things. Yeah, we'll have to work with them. As Councilmember Seves pointed out, this is a new program. We're cutting edge with JPIA, and we're wanting to take full advantage of this program, but the JPIA has indicated that they are willing to partner with us on some of these issues. I don't know that they know clearly how that assistance will work, whether they're looking to loan money to address some of these issues, or whether they're actually looking to have a pie of money that they're going to be providing, and how deep that's going to go. But being first in line, I think, will help us in that.
Yeah. So it's possible this may even pay for itself if they, I mean, I know you can't promise that, of course, but if they help us fund some of these projects that we may otherwise be on the hook for, we could be in better shape than we, it's one more reason to do it, I guess, is what I'm saying.
For some of those people who go up and down the coast making their livelihood by challenging jurisdictions' compliance with ADA. Mm. One challenge on that would far exceed what we're looking at in, mm-hmm. in terms of this program here.
Okay, good. Thank you.
So would you say those people are actually doing a public service by forcing people's hands?
Boy, that's generous.
That's stretching.
Yeah, I think that would stretch. I think that staff's recommendation is that your dollars are better served complying with the law and removing barriers rather than compensating, you know, attorneys who are pointing out to us that which we already know.
Yeah, no, I'm in agreement totally. So let me give you a personal story about this. Since I have been confined to a wheelchair here the last 14 months, I parked over at Big Five down at Five Points and on what I think is the north side, maybe the east side of Big Five. There was no wheelchair access on that side of the building, and I had to go out. There were cars parked in front. I had to go out into the flow of traffic to get around to the access point. Now, someone should point out there's a lawsuit waiting to happen right there, you know. Anyway, I never noticed that. I've been in Big Five 100 times and never noticed that until it was brought to me in short order. So I'm sure we're doing a very good thing by moving this forward. So, Councilmember Esteves, did you want to make a motion?
Do we have any speaker slips on this?
Yes. Sorry. Thank you for that.
C2, yeah.
I'm sorry?
C2?
Aren't we on C2? Okay, I'm premature. No, we don't.
No. All right.
Go ahead.
So after hearing that, then I'll move that we authorize the signing of the Memorandum of Understanding with the California Joint Powers Insurance Authority for an ADA assistance program.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Passes unanimously. Which brings us to C2, if you would, Mr. Kutaya.
Item C2, Measure A Project Cooperative Agreement.
All right, Ms. Gaglione and Mr. Winslow, if you would.
Thank you, Mayor Farr, members of the council. So Mr. Winslow is going to go through the basic overview of the cooperative agreement and then the one project that we're not moving forward at this time that we're still studying. If there are any questions on that crosswalk project, I'll be happy to answer that.
Thank you, Ms. Gaglione. Mayor Farr, members of the council and members of the public. James Winslow, Senior Project Engineer with the Capital Improvement Program. We're here today to talk about the Measure A Cooperative Agreement. As you know, in December and January, we applied for grants through the Measure A Program. It's a half-cent sales tax in the county, split north and south. And then with that, there's two additional programs, the regional bike and ped grants, as well as safe routes to schools. We were successful in receiving funding for 5 grants. We brought this back to you in May, and at this time we're coming back for just the 4 grants. They total $552,000 approximately, and the 4 projects that we're asking with the cooperative agreement would be for the bicycle master plan, some supplemental funding for that project, the Fairview Calle Real 101 sidewalk infill project, the Fairview project at Stowe Road, which is a bike and sidewalk infill, as well as widening the lanes from 1 to 2, or 2 to 4 in that area, as well as the rectangular rapid flashing beacons, the improvements at the school zones. At this time, you know, those 4 projects, like I said, total $552,000. We need the cooperative agreement to be signed with the county. Once that project, if you guys would authorize the signature, it would go to SPCAG board for their approval and signature, and then we'll be able to proceed with some of these projects that are on the list and move them forward.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And I love stuff like this because there's no question when you finish, you've improved the livability of the city, so thank you for this. I have some speaker slips here that I would like to call upon. Now, Brigitte, I'm going to massacre your last name here. Bexelius, is it?
Bexelius?
Yeah. Followed by Steve George, followed by Trudy Huffnide? Never hide.
Hi, Mr. Mayor, that was a good try. I have an X in my name, which makes it a little difficult. My name is Birgitta Bexelius. I'm a resident in Encina Royal here in Goleta. And I strongly support the NTDS, which stands for Newtown Goleta Safety Project, Traffic Project, with its tireless leader, Steve George, who's present here today and will speak later. And I also would like to encourage everyone who lives in Goleta and moves around in Goleta to read everything that he is proposing and also hopefully support the project. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, Steve, if you would.
Well, that was a good introduction.
I know. Quite a buildup.
Thank you, Mayor and City Council. I appreciate it. I just wanted to come today and voice my support for everything that's on the list for the approval, and really to point out that the infill project near the library is been a long time coming. It will be greatly appreciated. You can go out there any day and see people with canes and wheelchairs out in the dirt or on the sidewalk. So I can't say more, but just positive, and I hope you all support that. The infill project on the Fairview Overpass, as Rosemarie or Ms. Gaglione knows, is my third choice solution. I support it in that I'm trying to save kids' lives and pedestrians' lives. I recognize that bicyclists are not probably going to be really happy if we close down the ramp. I don't have a better solution. If you would give me the pedestrian overpass to Fairview Center, I'd be happy, but I haven't come up with the $2 million yet. In any case, I do support it, but as I said, it's not my first choice. With regard to the one subject that's being tabled today or being pushed out to a later date for continued review, and that's the proposed crosswalk on Calle Real, I do want to say a few words about it. I know I wasn't here for the May meeting. I did have a chance to review the video of the meeting, and I know a lot of issues came up, such as signal timing, volumes of cars, volumes of people, arterial versus connecting road. One of the issues that kind of stuck with me is the issue of delivery. I don't remember if it was Councilman Bennett or Councilman Aceves that was concerned about where the crosswalk delivered people. I guess my concern is, I think if we go down that path and we get too hung up on it, the truth of the matter is the crosswalk will deliver to a sidewalk, just like all the crosswalks. Mm-hmm. It's not an issue of do we have an embracing solution yet with one of the owners of whether it's Albertsons, whether it's Tobes. Ideally, in the future, I would love to have some sort of an integrated solution that takes the crosswalk into the shopping center. I'd love to cross the shopping centers to have better issues with ADA access and pedestrian access. But I see that as down the road. Right now, what we're trying to do is solve a 1,000-foot stretch, which is over three city blocks, with no connecting road or crosswalk to get from one side of the street to the other, from one crosswalk to the other crosswalk. I'm sorry, sidewalk to the other sidewalk. So I'm hoping that we don't make that an issue, that we at this point, when I walk down the sidewalk, I enter that shopping center through driveways that exist today. It's going to be in the future until something happens within the private property area. So right now, I just want to get across the street, and I would hope that we can solve that issue and get your support for getting us across the street. So, and obviously, I support the three crosswalks for the students, so appreciate your attention. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Now, Trudy, I haven't done very well by your name either. Abderhide?
Hey, that was better.
Thank you, Mayor Farr and City Council members. My name is Trudy Ofterheide, and I live in Encino Royale, and I still walk. I've been walking a long time, and it certainly would help me if there was a crosswalk a little bit closer to Albertsons or going across that way. I have to go clear down from Encina, cut through some property to get over to the other crosswalk, which is very difficult to get across, so it would support me and my other friends in Encina who have trouble walking to have a crosswalk that is closer. So thank you.
All right. Councilmember Bennett, you had something to say about this when we talked about it the first time.
I did, and evidently staff does yet able to answer the questions that were raised at that meeting, because we don't have those answers in today's report, so I presume that's still pending.
That is still pending. We have a consultant working on the report.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And thanks to the Newtown Goleta folk, you guys, how old is your organization? 4 years? Well, you're certainly a presence with us now. So, yeah, Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo would like a word.
I think one or two questions. So I know the crosswalk is waiting, as my understanding, on a traffic engineering study to tell us about counts as far as left turns and all that stuff. And I know that's been affected by the fact that we've lost our traffic engineer. But when do you think we'll have those counts done and be able to move forward with this?
I would hope within the next few weeks. I had expected it to already be complete.
Sure.
And counts, there were a number of counts done, and then some design modifications discussed if it were to be built, and then the traffic engineer realized he needed some additional counts on left-turning movements and whether or not folks were using that center lane as a two-stage left. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. Our approach on this is to get everything,
sure.
Make sure all of the questions are answered so we can bring you something that's truly complete, and that no matter which way the report falls out, that everyone will see it's been, every angle has been looked at that we could think of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I appreciate that, and I know, that was one of the concerns I had when it came to us the first time. I want to make sure we're not making it worse by putting that crosswalk in and just setting people up to get hit by a car. But on the other hand, I also want to reward the work of our citizens. The Newtown Safety Committee has worked really hard, and it's always nice to let people know the system works. You bring us an issue, and we'll try and fix it. So I know there's challenges here, and I know you're doing the very best you can. I just hope to see it soon. Let me put it that way.
Understood.
Yeah. Councilmember Perotti.
How does it? Okay, so this a project was approved by the scoring committee.
Yes.
And but it's still, so I'm putting it on hold. What does that exactly mean? How long do we have before then it has to be approved by council, and then it goes to SBCAG, and then if we don't do it, we've lost that amount of money, correct?
SBCAG is fine with what we're doing at this point, so that we can go ahead and begin design work on these other four projects.
Okay.
We have talked with their staff to make sure it's okay. So we're not in danger of losing this other money, and they were also fine with it being a sort of a two-step process, that when a decision is made on this project, that we could then go ahead and amend the cooperative work, the co-op, so that we can have that project.
Okay. I just make a comment that that I didn't realize it was three blocks long before there's another crosswalk, and that's just really long ways. So I would like to see some sort of another crosswalk. I do understand the challenges that you're bringing forward. I think that we have to look at something here that, you know, this whole area, when it was designed, was not designed for pedestrians. Mm-hmm. But now we have pedestrians, and we want them to get travel safely. So it's going to take some creative thinking how we can do that. But I think it will even bring revitalization to that area to be able to do more to help everybody get across safely. So I'm just hoping that we can really come up with an idea that will work. And I realize the challenge, but I'm confident we'll come up with something.
Thank you so
I do have one other quick question, just real quickly. I know that's not on here on this particular report, but and maybe I should just ask you on another time, but the hawk at Kingston and Kyriel, was that not part of, that wasn't Measure A? I know, didn't we receive some money for that?
Yes, we did. That's a Highway Safety Improvement Program
okay.
money. And so the, that's next on deck for design for crosswalk improvements.
Okay. And then I know that the folks at Encina Royale have asked several times for curb painting. Is that something you're working on as well?
Yes, we're going to be bringing a list of curbs to be painted red.
Great.
To the council very soon.
Okay. And then one last question. I know that we all agreed to the Fairview Avenue Kyriel 101 intersection sidewalk infill. I just still have concerns about how people will navigate that are using it now, and how much longer out of their way it will take them. And I know Councilmember Bennett, I think, has expressed the desire that we need to make sure that they're not going to be able to still access that path. So I guess my question to you is, well, just a comment, not even a question. I have my concerns that we're fixing one thing, but are we creating another problem? And I started thinking, and somebody brought it to my attention, that the old Rusty's is now going to be Cajun Kitchen. And what happens at Cajun Kitchen on the weekends? A line out the door. They're usually, Saturday, Sunday, they're really, really busy. And I don't think there'll be enough parking there. So where are they going to park? They're going to park across the street at Osh, and where are they going to cross? So I think that's an interesting idea to look at, and I don't know how, they're not going to go to the end of the street to cross at the light. I mean, it's just human nature. That's just, so I don't know. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but it's just something that came to me, and I think it's something we need to think about.
Yes, and there have been some ideas thrown out that, you know, and that are not optimal. I mean, it's an odd area where they where you have that turn. And once again, as you get into the idea of trying to not make something worse or create a new problem, when you right now, if people are regardless of the path, if people are going to jaywalk, unfortunately they are going to jaywalk. We would like them to come to a light where it's safe. And so hopefully that won't become a pattern. Aside from erecting something in the median that would make it very inconvenient to try to get across, I'm not sure what we can do to stop folks from taking the shortcut. Mm-hmm. But we can definitely look at there's, I won't discuss the idea itself, but something's been thrown out that as a possibility, but we'll take a close look and see if there's anything else that we can do. Okay. It's a difficult section of road to work with.
Okay, thank you.
Well, if we build a barrier, we'll be sued for slowing people down as they cross. Yeah.
I'd leave that to the city attorney to answer that question.
Very good. All right. Have we everybody had a chance to comment on this?
Not me. I do have a question.
Councilmember Aceves.
Regarding the Fairview Garden sidewalk, in the 10 years that I've been on this council, we've been asking for this every year to get done. And I'm always told that we can't do it until we fix the intersection as far as the signalization and that spaghetti of power lines. Where is that? And can we still put the sidewalk in without dealing with that intersection? Fairview and Stowe Canyon.
Yes, I think we're talking about signalization. We're not signalizing the that intersection right now. We're putting lights up. Signalizing, there are a lot of lights, wires in the way, but this is a street light, not a traffic signal at that intersection right now.
Okay, but I was under the understanding that we were not going to do the sidewalk until we took that spaghetti out. That was the inhibitor for improving the sidewalk.
Was I given bad information years ago?
I'm not sure that that's an issue. I'll go back and check
so
on
we
that.
Can do the sidewalk, we can do the bike lane.
Yes.
And it's not going to be held up by anything we need to do at that intersection.
I don't believe so.
Okay.
All right. Do we have a motion to support the city manager in this issue?
I'd like to make the motion.
Okay, please.
Approve and authorize the city manager to enter into a project cooperative agreement with the Santa Barbara County Association of Governments for four of the five projects under Cycle 3 funding of the Measure A Bicycle and Pedestrian and Safe Routes to School programs.
Second. I'll second.
Oh. Either one.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, folks, for your presentation. Okay, now I think there's a need that we meet once again in closed session. Is that correct, Mr. Giles?
Yes, Mayor. The council will need to continue its discussion, public employee performance evaluation pursuant to Section 54957B with regard to the city attorney's annual performance evaluation this afternoon. No reportable action is anticipated from that, and the council session will take up again at 6 o'clock this evening.
Okay, the afternoon session of the Goleta City Council is adjourned to rejoin in closed session and to continue at 6 o'clock for our evening session. I would like to call to order the evening session of the Goleta City Council. If you will join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Play ball.
I was going to say, since we're an intimate group here tonight, there is considerable interest in the game, so if someone gets a score, why don't you share it with us? Yeah, maybe that is why they're not here. All right, Ms. Liana, if you would call us to order.
Councilmember Perotti.
Here.
Councilmember Bennett.
Here.
Councilmember Aceves.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tempore Vallejo.
Here.
Mayor Farr.
Here. Well, I don't have any public comment that is different. Pat Kistler's going to speak here on our main subject, which we're about to run into. So, Ms. Trepa, if you would lead us in this discussion, we'd appreciate it.
Mr. Mayor.
Oh, wait a minute. I forgot something.
Got it.
Amendments or adjustments to the agenda?
There are no amendments or adjustments tonight.
There should be an electric charge in the seat of the mayor whenever he misses something, although I would be hopping a lot, probably.
Report out of closed session.
Closed session.
Yeah, Mr. Giles.
Yeah, the city council did meet in closed session this afternoon on an item that was continued from a special meeting this morning on public employee performance evaluation. No reportable action was taken in that session.
Okay. Anything else I'm missing? No? All right, Ms. Trepa, if you would.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. The item before you this evening is a follow-up to the council meeting that took place on July 19th, during which options to balance the library budget were discussed. And as we have discussed previously, the general situation at the library is that reserves are dwindling rapidly, and they will likely be fully depleted within the next couple years unless there is a significant increase in revenue, a reduction in expenditures, or a combination of both. So at the July 19th meeting, staff provided some options with regard to reducing expenditures and increasing the city's contribution in order to reduce the deficit spending as a short-term measure, but not completely eliminate the budget shortfall. And at that meeting, the City Council did provide some direction to staff, which is here on the slide before you.
The City Council appropriated an additional $42,000 in development impact fee from the library fund for a total of $102,000 for fiscal year 16-17. The council also directed that staff work with the City of Santa Barbara to fill the children's librarian position as quickly as possible, either with a City of Santa Barbara employee, a City of Goleta employee, or some contract staff person. Council also directed that reserves be utilized to fund the ongoing deficit as long as such funds are available, and they asked that staff begin discussions with both the City and the County of Santa Barbara to assume direct management of the Goleta Library while making sure that we maintain Measure L and county per capita funding. At that meeting, the City Council did make it very clear that they did not want to reduce operating hours. Therefore, the library continues to remain open 7 days a week and 55 hours over the course of a week. Related to library management, in the event we have members of the public that are watching us, it is important to understand the current management structure at the library. The library, as the council is aware, the library operates as a county branch library within the countywide system, although the City of Goleta does own the building and the collection. The library is operated by the City of Santa Barbara under an agreement with the County of Santa Barbara as part of Zone 1 of the countywide system. The county contracts with municipal libraries to operate the countywide system, which is divided into three zones. And then Zone 1, as the administrator of Zone 1, the City of Santa Barbara operates its municipal libraries, as well as the county branch libraries of Goleta, Solvang, Buellton, Montecito, Carpinteria, and Los Olivos. In exchange for those services, the City of Santa Barbara receives county per capita funding at the current rate of $7.80 per person for the estimated population in Zone 1. At that point, the City of Santa Barbara determines the library service boundaries and allocates the per capita funding to the individual branch libraries based on the estimated population in each of the branch service areas. So the estimated population for the Goleta Library service area is approximately 90,000. Therefore, for the Goleta Library, approximately a third of the service area is the City of Goleta, and two-thirds is comprised of residents in county unincorporated areas in and adjacent to the Goleta Valley. In addition to the county operating agreement, the City of Goleta also contracts with the City of Santa Barbara to further outline general library management services, including the allocation of City Measure L proceeds generated within the City of Goleta used to support the library. The current agreement with the City of Santa Barbara expires on December 31st of this year, so the agreement will likely need to be extended depending on Santa Barbara's discussions with the county and our discussions this evening. And then finally, both the Goleta and County Library operating agreements authorize the City of Santa Barbara to charge an administrative fee to operate the branch libraries. The administrative fee is intended to cover general management costs not allocated directly to or not captured in the direct operating costs. And the current fee right now that the City of Santa Barbara charges its branch libraries is 9%, exclusive of the fee itself. Also related to library governance is the City of Santa Barbara's membership in Black Gold, which is a library cooperative authorized by the State of California. It's comprised primarily of the Central Coast municipal libraries, including the cities of Santa Barbara, Lompoc, and Santa Maria. The County of Santa Barbara is not a member of Black Gold. The cooperative is a joint powers authority with its own set of bylaws. Its purpose is to share collection material throughout its member agencies, including the technology and the delivery services used to do so. Black Gold also acquires and manages all the electronic material on behalf of its membership. Presently, the City of Santa Barbara, as the Black Gold member of Zone 1, receives all of the collection material on loan for the South County area and then distributes that material to the branch libraries, and back and forth it goes. And as a point of information, Goleta is a net borrower in the system. Therefore, we borrow more material than we actually lend out of our own local library. It's also important to note that Black Gold is managed by an administrative council whose members include the library directors of each of its member agencies. The executive director of Black Gold, as well as the library directors within Santa Barbara County, have indicated that Goleta will likely be required to have a dedicated library director in order to participate in Black Gold governance as an equal member. So the Administrative Council can set its own eligibility requirements. So for the purposes of tonight's discussion, we have included a library director into our budget considerations, which I'll discuss at a later slide. Also related to separate membership in Black Gold is the requirement that the Goleta collection would then need to be inventoried separately and re-tagged. The Ruth Metz report that was presented to Council in July 2015 estimated that creating a new Black Gold account and contracting with the service to re-tag the inventory could cost upwards of $150,000. The report is attached to the staff report for your information. Alternatively, volunteers and library staff could assist with this effort, as I understand they have in the past, which would reduce costs, although there would still need to be some dedicated resources to actually plan and coordinate that project. The City Council at July 19th directed staff to begin discussions to assume management of the Goleta Library. So in addition to the current operating agreements and our inclusion in Black Gold through the City of Santa Barbara, it's also important to note that public libraries are regulated by the State of California under the Library Services Act. Therefore, a change in governance at the Goleta Library may require approval by the state. There are a number of intertwined financial and legal issues associated with the change in library management, and the city attorney's office has been evaluating options with regard to library management. I'd like to acknowledge that Special Counsel Julie Scott is here with us this evening, and she will be available to answer any questions that you may have after the presentation. We've also attached to the staff report a memo that she prepared in January of 2015 regarding library governance, and so she'll be available to answer some questions afterwards. One of the options available to us is to create a Goleta Library Department here within the city of Goleta and to contract directly with the County of Santa Barbara to manage the library while maintaining the same service area in order to preserve Measure L funding and the per capita funding. We would still need to confirm how we would participate in Black Gold. And Black Gold members, they must be a free public library consistent with the Library Services Act and accepted into the cooperative by the current membership. One option may be to also continue to contract with the City of Santa Barbara for Black Gold membership, something we could explore. And in addition, what we would need to do is confirm the Goleta Library service boundaries, which are currently established by the City of Santa Barbara. So our question is whether or not we would need to do a formal zone change, which would need to be approved by the State of California, or if that's something that can be taken care of internally within the county structure. So questions of service boundaries and zone, a potential zone change, is something that still needs to be evaluated. Alternatively, consistent with the current library governance that exists right now within the County of Santa Barbara is to form a municipal library, which is also discussed as part of the memo that was attached to the staff report. To form a municipal library would require that the council adopt an ordinance creating a municipal library, establishing a board of trustees to oversee library operations, appointing members to that board consistent with state requirements, and to apply for approval from the state. This is how the cities of Santa Barbara, Lompoc, and Santa Maria currently manage their libraries and in turn contract with the County of Santa Barbara to operate the county branches in exchange for per capita funding and the administrative fee. I should note that a municipal library can only provide services to its own jurisdiction. Therefore, to continue to provide services to the unincorporated Goleta Valley would also require that agreement with the County of Santa Barbara. Forming a municipal library is consistent with the initial guidance we received from the Black Gold Executive Director in terms of eligibility for forming Black Gold. But having said that, there may be other governance options available that would still be acceptable to Black Gold, and that's something that potentially can be explored further with the attorney's office. Just like the other option, if we formed a municipal library, we'd still contract directly with the County of Santa Barbara to manage the library on behalf of the current service area. We would still need to confirm the service area, and we would still need to confirm whether or not a zone change was necessary. As directed by council, we have met with staff of both the city and county of Santa Barbara to discuss a potential takeover of library operations. From the county's perspective, their primary concern is that services be maintained to the broader Goleta Valley, which would also preserve Measure L on the per capita funding. They did question whether or not a zone change would be necessary, and they were following up with county council on that question. The city of Santa Barbara, on the other hand, is supportive of whatever direction the Goleta City Council decides to take. Their primary concern relates to the lack of adequate funding to operate the branch libraries at the service levels that the local agencies would like. The city of Santa Barbara is currently negotiating with the county to modify the zone operating agreement that the three zone administrators signed together as a group. Their goal, the city of Santa Barbara goal, is to clarify what service levels the county per capita actually funds and then provide the local cities with the option to fund the difference based on enhanced service levels that those cities would actually request. So in our particular case, we'd like to maintain 7 days a week, 55 hours. That's more than what the county funding can fund. So given the option, you know, we would then come forward and fund the difference if that's something that the council were to direct. So they're trying to clarify that language in the operating agreement that they're negotiating right now with the county of Santa Barbara. The city of Santa Barbara has also indicated that the administrative fee will be increased from 9% to 18% beginning July 1st, which is the fee they have stated is being charged by the Zone 2 and Zone 3 administrators, so for those branch libraries. So for the budget discussion, I have factored in this increase to 18%, which I'll cover in the forthcoming slides. We also discussed with the city of Santa Barbara the vacant children's librarian position. And Santa Barbara staff, city staff, are not supportive of filling the vacant position with either a Santa Barbara or a Goleta regular employee pending any formal decision by the Goleta City Council regarding a possible takeover of the library. Their concern is that the layoff and hire of a library employee from one agency to another is a complication that Santa Barbara staff does not feel is in the best interest of a new employee, and they feel it would create difficulties in a recruitment. So while this position has remained vacant, I do want to acknowledge that the existing library staff has worked very, very hard to continue providing children's programming, and they did also provide the summer reading program. That was very much a concern at the July meeting. So depending on tonight's discussion, Santa Barbara may be amenable to a contract or temporary staff person that would be funded by Goleta and under the direct supervision of Santa Barbara as an interim measure. The estimated cost of such a person without benefits would be in the range of approximately $30 to $50 an hour. But I would like to stress that this is a temporary employee just while a decision is pending. If the City Council were to take formal action to proceed with assuming library control, at that point, we would proceed with developing library classifications and a compensation plan, and we would begin the effort to directly hire both a library director and a children's librarian, and then work with the City of Santa Barbara to transfer any of the existing employees at the library. Which brings me to budget considerations. I've taken the table that was in the staff report for the ease of viewing and broken it out into the next several slides so that I could walk you all through the budget discussion, because that's really the critical reason for having this conversation. First, I'd like to emphasize that the budget information that is prepared is based on the current working budget that was prepared by the City of Santa Barbara. It's adjusted for some assumptions that I'll explain in a few minutes. And it's used to compare Santa Barbara's management of the library versus Goleta's management of the library if we were to take over library operations. The dollars are estimated for discussion purposes only. They're to illustrate an order of magnitude in terms of potential general fund impact on an annual basis. It is not a proposed budget for taking over, for assuming library control. So on the revenue side, essentially, the revenue remains the same whether Santa Barbara operates the library or Goleta operates the library. So for the purposes of this discussion, I've kept the county per capita contribution that was reported for this fiscal year or budgeted for this fiscal year at approximately $706,000. The county did provide a one-time contribution that equated to $42,000 for the Goleta Library. I've taken it out of the conversation or out of the budget assumptions because it was a one-time contribution and not guaranteed in years forward. I've kept the fines and fees and copy fees the same at the same level. The city's contribution for on the revenue side, I put in the $10,000 for the library DIF contribution. Again, whether it's Santa Barbara run or Goleta run, I'm assuming that the amount would be the same, and the $10,000 is what was budgeted previously before we began to increase our contribution to help support support the library. Measure L is the same on both sides. This number represents both county and city-generated Measure L. Room rentals are the same. Interest donation revenue the same. And again, assuming the Friends contribution remains the same at $48,000 a year, essentially the revenue base for the library is the same regardless as to who operates the library. The expenditure side is really where the comparison is. So on this slide, what we did was we kept the same staffing structure. So on the full-time salaries and benefits, that represents on the Santa Barbara side five full-time positions, including the children's librarian position. That has always been in the budget. It just has been vacant. So that number remains the same. That's taken directly from the Santa Barbara working budget. On the city side, we've added the sixth position, which is the library director. And that position has an approximate value of $230,000, including benefits. It does not include, and this was a question that came up at the library committee, it does not include any reduction for allocation of the library director or the library manager on the city of Santa Barbara side. Those costs are built into the administrative fee. They're not included directly in the operating budget. For the purposes of discussion, I've kept the part-time salaries the same. We have approximately 14 part-time employees at the library. The budget for that is $222,000, and I've kept that the same on both sides. Supplies and services, I kept the same at $105,000. The black gold fee is allocated to the Goleta Library by the City of Santa Barbara, and that fee is $170,000 for this fiscal year. The Ruth Metz report indicated that fee potentially could drop to $110,000, but again, that wasn't confirmed, but we would have a different cost basis than the city of Santa Barbara, and so that fee is estimated at $110,000 if we were to directly manage the library or be a direct participant in Black Gold. The allocated costs are the costs associated with operating the building. We did receive a copy of the transaction register, the detail report from the city of Santa Barbara, and it does include a line item for overhead for building operating costs, which represented 35%. So on our side, we would still have operating costs for the building. I reduced that line item by 35%. It's the city of Santa Barbara's practice to provide to charge out to the departments an overhead cost, an allocated cost, or to charge overhead on their allocated cost. So I've just reduced our cost by 35%, assuming all of the other building expenses are the same with regard to janitorial and utilities and things like that. Book acquisitions remain the same at $150,000. The administrative fee on the Santa Barbara side represents 18%. I've taken it out on the city side. What I did add in on the city side is $30,000 for IT-related reserves. That was something that was mentioned in the Ruth Metz report, that we haven't been creating a reserve for commuter replacement and technology upgrades, which are a critical part of the library operations. So we know that that's something that will actually affect the library budget, and so I put it in here. The net result is that, based on this comparison of potential expenditures, is that it's about $175,000 cheaper for the city of Goleta to operate the library than the city of Santa Barbara. However, there are some caveats that I think are important to mention. This slide summarizes the potential general fund impact, showing Santa Barbara on the left with the adjustments that I mentioned, as well as Goleta on the right. Basically, the shortfall is on the Santa Barbara side, using the 18% administrative fees, approximately $370,000, where on our side it would be approximately $195,000. I've included one-time startup costs, just information that was in the Ruth Metz report. So anywhere from $150,000 to $250,000 potentially are our startup costs. But I wanted to highlight several key points that are gleaned from evaluating the budget implications. And in conversations that we've had with the library directors at Lompoc and Santa Maria, the biggest issue, as we are aware, is that there's insufficient revenue at current levels to balance the library budget with current service levels. Even if we were to run the library directly, we would not be able to operate it within the current revenue sources. It's also important to note that the comparison on this slide does not include any potential impacts to Goleta's general government operations, such as human resources, technology support services, finance, legal, and the executive leadership team. Essentially, those are the costs that are included in the overhead and the administrative fee that the City of Santa Barbara charges. The library represents a $1.5 million operation with approximately 20 employees. And I would also like to add that right now it's operating at a very, very reduced budget. The staffing levels are very, very lean, and there's been some concern expressed by the workload and the operational stress by really pushing these employees as hard as they've been running to run the library with the resources that are currently available to them. So potentially the true cost to the City of Goleta is actually higher than what is shown here on the slide. The Ruth Metz budget evaluation that we presented the summer of 2015 estimated the budget shortfall, if we were to operate the library directly, to be closer to $250,000 at the time that they evaluated the budget numbers. To illustrate the type of commitment the other municipal libraries have made, we've done a general comparison of Goleta's potential budget to operate the library with the main libraries of Lompoc and Santa Maria. I've copied the service indicators comparison from the staff report onto this slide, which I'd like to briefly go over. It's important to note that this comparison is not necessarily an apples-to-apples comparison either. Again, the intent here is just to provide a general order of magnitude when we're comparing library operations. For both Lompoc and Santa Maria, the information provided is for the main library only. It doesn't include their branch libraries. When we look at the general information in terms of square footage, cardholders, and service population, it's clear that Santa Maria has a very large library. They have a two-story library with four service desks, so that that actually drives up their staffing costs. So that's why, that's part of the reason they have such a high staffing number, is because they've got the two floors. With regard to the service indicators, these numbers are coming from the spring 2016 working budgets that were provided to the Library Advisory Committee. According to that information, Lompoc's last updated service indicators were for fiscal year 14-15. However, when we did meet with staff as part of this research project, the library director indicated that their service levels, their indicators have actually gone up, and they're very pleased with how the library is operating. And it's important to note that they actually took over direct management of their library. They recrafted how their libraries were managed a little over a year ago, maybe close to two now. And they're very happy with that decision, but it was done not as a cost-saving measure, but to actually increase the services that are being provided to their residents. When we look at the service indicators on this slide, you can see how active our library is. All of our service indicators really are in excess of what's being accomplished by the other two main libraries. So our short staff, our small staff, is really producing a fair amount of work and providing tremendous services to the Goleta Valley. With regard to the staffing numbers, it's important to note that Lompoc does have a bookmobile. We've pulled out from the staffing number here that's on the slide the staff that are dedicated to the bookmobile program, but the cost of the bookmobile is still in the budget numbers because I didn't have the information to pull it out of the budget. I did pull it out of the staffing comparison, though. Also, both libraries, Lompoc and Santa Maria, report on their budget, their contribution a little bit differently. So, for example, on the revenue side, Santa Maria will show a very large general fund contribution on the revenue side. Lompoc, on the other hand, will show a general fund contribution on the revenue side, and then they'll show a deficit, and they actually fund the deficit. So on this slide, I did indicate what the estimated general fund commitment was, factoring in both the direct contribution on the revenue side as well as the deficit funding that they were doing. For our purposes, I indicated the $195,000, which is that estimated shortfall if we were to run the library with no other impacts to the organization. Lompoc is in excess of $900,000, and Santa Maria contributes $1.8 million. In essence, those two agencies are funding their libraries at approximately $18 per capita. Our estimated shortfall or our estimated contribution, if we were to proceed with a general fund commitment and cover the budget shortfall, we would be about 6.5. And again, this number could be higher depending on ultimate impacts to the rest of the operation. When we were discussing this with the city of Lompoc, it was interesting. The library director there and the city manager made it very clear that they made the decision to assume direct control of their library as part of a long-term economic development strategy to more fully invest in the skills and the intellectual well-being of their residents. So for them, this was a commitment that they were prepared to make to their community as part of an economic development strategy and to really enhance what they were able to offer their residents in a much more holistic perspective. So they approached this project a little bit differently. So that essentially concludes the information that was brought before the Library Committee on September 26th. And at that time, we discussed bringing this forward to the full council, that it would be a good time now for the full council to have an opportunity to discuss potential next steps. If the City Council continued to support direct management of the Goleta Library, I've outlined here on the slide some potential next steps that would be brought back for City Council for formal action. Essentially, in order to proceed, we would recommend that staff be directed to work with the Attorney's Office to confirm our governance structure and to negotiate with both the City and County of Santa Barbara to effect the transition. We would likely need to extend the current operating agreement with the City of Santa Barbara for another 6 months. While we go through this process.
This is 7116.
Oh, I'm sorry, it would be 7117. Sorry, 7117, 2017. That would get us through to the next fiscal year, which would be the realistic time frame for implementing such a change. We would need to potentially apply to the state of California for approval of new governance structure if that's confirmed by the Attorney's Office. Again, any zone changes or service boundary changes may need to be would need to be approved by Goleta and the City and County of Santa Barbara. Staff would need to create library classifications and compensation schedule for council approval, and we would need to begin then the recruitment for any vacant staff positions, such as the children's librarian, and work with the City of Santa Barbara to offer employment to the Santa Barbara employees that are currently working at the Goleta Library. And then it's also a part of that, we would obviously have to develop an operating budget as part of our fiscal year 17-19 budget cycle and plan for a transition effective July 1st, 2017. Alternatively, the council could consider not assuming direct management of the Goleta Library and remain as a county branch operated by the City of Santa Barbara. The estimated budget deficit to be funded by Goleta, factoring in an 18% administrative fee, would likely be in excess of $370,000 for next fiscal year. Therefore, both direct management of the library and continued operation by the City of Santa Barbara will potentially have a direct impact on the Goleta General Fund if there are no changes in service levels. Remaining with Santa Barbara provides continuity of experienced professional management of the library, while Goleta management would need to develop that expertise. Goleta management of the library would provide increased local control and accountability for library operations unless a different agreement were negotiated with the City of Santa Barbara to ensure more input in library operations decision-making in exchange for Goleta funding commitments. And essentially, that concludes my presentation.
All right. Does council have any questions of Ms. Trepa?
Sure,
there was some talk the last time we discussed this as to a fee that we would vote on in a couple of years to increase the library fee? No? Didn't we talk about that? We were going to do it with the county, right?
We passed on the initiative that we were going to
put
on
the ballot. Oh, for the ballot measure, yes. So at this point, we are not proceeding with the ballot measure for 2016. That is still an option for a future election year for 2018, depending on what the conversation that has taken place regionally, and again, once again, with the City Council here and with the County Board of Supervisors. So there is always the potential to proceed with a separate ballot measure at some point in the future.
I got a couple of questions then.
Yeah. Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo.
Okay. So these one-time startup costs, I think I know the answer, but we can't use DIF fees for that.
No.
Okay. Wishful thinking. The operating deficit we're looking at, so even if we're off with the calculation, and I know there's a lot of moving parts, and
right.
I've done enough budgets in my life to know that it's, you know, we're more than likely off. I mean, hopefully not a lot. But either way, even conservatively, we're still financially better off going our own way. I mean, we're talking about a deficit of $370,000 we'd have to fund versus $195,000. And one way or the other, we'd have to fund it if we wanted to keep our level of service and everything else.
Correct. So in terms of broad numbers, it appears to be more cost effective for us to directly manage the library, but again, with the caveat that this doesn't include any other indirect impacts to our general government operations. But yes, with the increase to 18% for the admin fee, for the administrative mm-hmm. fee, it looks as if it's more cost effective for okay. us to run the library.
And I can't imagine, maybe you're going to address this, so go ahead, Ms. Green. Were you going to say something?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, even with a 10% factor in for overhead, 20%, we're still more cost efficient doing it this way, right? It's unlikely that the overhead that we would generate here in City Hall would be more than the deficit we're looking to avoid, is what I'm trying to say. I don't know if I'm saying this clearly, but
I understand the concept that you're getting at, but we haven't done an analysis that would give us a figure or, you know, a definite answer. Mm-hmm. We don't know if we would need to hire, for example, an additional accounting technician or someone to help with HR or IT, because we don't know at this point what the ultimate impact would be to our support functions. Mm-hmm. So it would be really impossible for us to estimate exactly how much that would be. And that's what I was going to emphasize, is that over time we'll get a better idea. But at this point, we know that there will be an additional impact to support services, but we don't know how to quantify that yet.
How many city employees do we have right now? And I'm not asking you to quantify. I'm just trying to get for my own comfort level. How many city employees do we have right now?
We have 65 or 66, I think, allocated positions, FTEs.
So we're talking about adding 8, 10, 12, because these aren't all full-time equivalents. So just for my own, I understand I'm not asking you to give me a yes or no. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I'm just trying to get my own perspective on this. Okay.
The 22 part-time employees equate to about 10 FTEs in addition to the 5 that are currently budgeted.
This says 14.
They're 14.
Part-time.
Oh, I'm sorry. So we have approximately 10 FTEs.
Thank you. And that just helps me mm-hmm. in terms of HR and things like that understand what we're mm-hmm. talking about. Have we spoken to the Friends? What do they think? Friends of Goleta Library.
So I had a very good board meeting with the Friends of the Library, and we presented a lot of information with regard to actually the governance structure, which I don't think they were completely aware of. They have some frustrations with how the library is currently being managed. Mm-hmm. I think they are supportive of certainly – They're supportive of providing additional resources to be able to run the library effectively. I have not had a conversation with the board directly saying, which would you prefer, City of Santa Barbara or City of Goleta? I do think there are some individual concerns that can be addressed either way to try and satisfy some of the concerns that they have.
Okay. And I guess lastly, We would have to hire a director because that's what the black gold system says.
Yes, on the one hand, and also I should note that both the city managers and the library directors at Lompoc and Santa Maria, as well as the city of Santa Barbara, have all indicated that directly managing a library does require somebody at that level, and the time commitment and the expertise that is needed to run the library necessitates the position. They would not recommend that that we would assume control of the library and manage the library without a library director.
So I'm wondering, have we discussed a cooperative effort with Lompoc or Santa Maria or both? In other words, share a director? I know that means we need more like a manager or whatever the title might be here, but if we were to share a director, because maybe our little library, and I realize it's not that little looking at these stats, but compared to Santa Barbara it is it a possibility we could share that position with, say, Lompoc? And that way we could have a full-time manager and share the cost of the director and meet the black gold requirements and have that expertise. I'm just wondering if we need that full-time director or if we just need that position for certain issues, and we could share that cost and make this even more palatable budget-wise. I realize you probably have to go look at that. I don't expect an answer.
Right.
Today.
We did not have that conversation with Lompoc or Santa Maria. Right now, we don't have a full-time director anyway because the Santa Barbara Library Director oversees...
That's my point, yeah.
Yeah, 7 or 8 libraries right now. Mm-hmm. And what level of effort she applies to the branch libraries, that I can't speak to. So I do think there's a balancing act in there. There mm-hmm. is a need for a library director. They're the ones that help guide the acquisition mm-hmm. of the collection and manage the services. They don't do any of the day-to-day operations. Whether we need a full-time one or we can share one, we would have to have that conversation with Lompoc and Santa Maria.
Well, the fact, and yeah,
and
we have
county.
To have that conversation, but the fact that Santa Barbara has 1 for 8 libraries right now mm-hmm. tells me that it's probably possible. You know, understanding that I don't understand the first thing about managing a library. You look at it from the outside, it seems like it'd be really easy, but I know there's a lot of people who spend a lot of time in school to learn how to do this the right way, and so I don't pretend to understand, you know, the complications that come with it, but if it's a possibility, that could help to make this even more. And we could spend more money on books and resources in the library if we didn't need that kind of expertise full time. So anyway, that was just a question I had.
Actually, that's a good question. Councilmember Bennett, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I'd like to weigh in a little bit on this. I do sit on the library committee, so I've had the pleasure of dealing with this issue for a number of years and kicking the can down the road and trying to come up with answers. To answer your last inquiry, number one, you would then have a non-city employee managing mm-hmm. as a library director, because that's what they're going to do. They're going to manage, which Santa Barbara's already said they will not do. Mm-hmm. So Santa Barbara's not an option. And in the case of Lompoc or Santa Maria, I can't imagine that they would have any delight in managing employees that they have no control over and that they do not work for them because of the split with the organizations. So I don't know that that's particularly realistic. Secondly, when you look at the staffing pattern of what we already have, the bottom line is we don't have anybody to begin with. So the library director, I would expect, is going to be a full working position, one that's going to be augmenting and providing functions that in some cases may be beyond what a normal or what an expectation of a library director might be. They're going to be providing more service than they might be considered in a much larger organization, more hands-on than you might otherwise find. So from my perspective, I don't think that's a realistic obligation, and I would hate to have our staff be spinning wheels trying to put something like that together when we're being pushed for time. Mm-hmm. Santa Barbara City's made it pretty clear they would very much like to have this end by the 1st of January. We've indicated working has taken us this long to get to this point to come up with recommendations to try to meet a July 1st deadline to get things on board. So the more we suggest that we want to go take a look at other things that I don't believe is realistic in that instance is going to bring us to crunch time as to trying to come up with this. And then we're going to spend another $375,000 because we don't have any other option because we've run out of time and we can't put together another program. And we already know That is a given with the city of Santa Barbara. And that doesn't include any pay increases beginning on July 1st for their organization of 2017. So you can add more dollars to that amount mm-hmm. right on the front end that will cause it to be far more expensive than what that we're talking about tonight.
Well, I mean, I understand that. I mean, I just want to – I'll let you go to the rest of your points, but as long as we're talking about this one, I don't know that it takes a whole lot more time to call Lompoc and Santa Maria and have the conversation. If you're right and they say no right off the bat, well, then we're done. If they say yes, we'd like to consider it, we could save some real dollars, use that money for other things. I mean, you wouldn't hire me to be your CFO if you only needed me for 5 hours of CFO work and then have me spend the rest of the time doing bookkeeping work. That's my point. If this director isn't necessary full-time and we could fill it, her time with – and maybe it's not. I don't know. I'm not in the room discussing this as a library professional. It doesn't seem like it's going to delay us 6 months if we ask the question and then find out what they say. And in the meantime, we go forward with the rest of our plans. I don't know. That's what I think.
Well, I wasn't finished with my comments yet.
Okay.
Moving on in taking it a step further with that particular suggestion that was already mentioned, well, there have to be a manager there anyway. So we already know that we don't have enough staff at the library to begin with. So I don't know how we solve that problem. And the issue of the allocated costs, one of the issues I brought up years ago, and I know you subtracted 35%, mm-hmm. and the 35% refreshed my memory on what that represented?
That's the overhead factor that Santa Barbara applies to all of its departments. So it equated to 35% for the library budget.
Okay, so $139,000 are hard costs.
Yes, that's what I put on the Goleta slide.
Right. Okay, I'm just defining it because right. it's not defined. And okay. I'm just saying those are the hard costs.
Yes.
So that includes utilities?
Yes.
It includes janitorial support?
I don't recall specifically what was on all those line items, but yes, it would include janitorial support.
Okay.
Because we would contract it out, so it would appear on that line item for us.
I understand. And when I questioned this a couple of years ago, I was somewhat mind-boggled by the amount of money that was being spent on janitorial support, for example, as opposed to what we spend for this entire facility here. And it was like we spent half the cost for janitorial support here versus what they were spending. And I took umbrage to that. I said this is part of the issue of having them run our library service for us. So I would like to better understand what that $139,000 represents, because I think it gives us another opportunity for reducing costs that have been identified under the current system. And I'm not here bad-mouthing Santa Barbara mm-hmm. City at all. I'm just saying I think under our system we can do it far less costly than the system that they've chose to accomplish some of their tasks. And I think we can do a better job with our own local control. So I'd like to have that pinned down if we can do so. I think that would be helpful. In regards to keeping the county on board, I think that's critically important. Could you give us a little more information? I think we got some more at the committee when you met with the county administrative office and their attitude towards moving forward on this.
Yes, I'd be happy to do that. We met with County CAO, one of the assistant county CAOs, and the department director who oversees libraries on behalf of the county. They were very supportive of a direction that would maintain the services for the library users in unincorporated county that's currently in the service area. I can't just say unincorporated Goleta Valley because it's a bigger service area than that. They weren't opposed at all to maintaining the current revenue structure and just said it made sense to them that, of course, Measure L, regardless of where it's collected, would still go to the Goleta Library. And they talked about just taking a look at the service area to ensure that the proper allocation of county per capita went to the Goleta Library. Really, the only question that we discussed that would take further research is what Kathleen noted about whether or not a zone change was going to be required or not. And they did want to consult with county council on that, and we've not heard back yet, but certainly we're happy to compare notes with what we've found through our special legal counsel that the city's engaged and get back together with them to finalize that question. But in general, they were understanding, very open to the idea, didn't see any major barriers or issues that would prevent us from moving forward.
Okay, thank you. I've got another question in regards to the Goleta budget considerations. On the expenditure side, you had indicated that currently the Santa Barbara full-time salaries and benefits is $519,397, and that includes the children librarian?
Yes.
And then you quoted a figure of $230,000 for full cost for a librarian. But I noticed the increase to Goleta was only $697,920, which is $178,500. So where is the difference in the $51,500 cost?
So what we did on the salary schedules, we took a look at the City of Santa Barbara classifications, and we sort of slotted them over onto the City of Goleta, on the City of Goleta's side. And so in some cases, there were increases. I now have to think back about what I did. So we slotted them over on what we thought would actually make sense in terms of where they would slot. So it's not exactly a one-for-one in terms of position salaries because they don't equate exactly. What we did do is we took the five existing positions and then we added the library director.
So we had to compare our salary schedule and the positions that we have already established and the ranges. Remember, we have a whole series of ranges, some of which have positions assigned to them and some which don't yet. They're just part of the structure. So that's what we were slotting those potential employees into so that they would have established ranges to go in. And some of the matches were close and some
were not
as close.
Right.
Okay, so this 230 is a full allocated cost factor that includes salary and all benefits.
It includes the yes, there is because the benefits are not separately delineated. I didn't have a way to actually do the benefit math. So this is a general number. It's the salary number with an estimate for the benefits using the City of Santa Barbara benefit structure. So I looked at where they were charging their numbers, where they were charging their salaries, and so it's a very general number, but it's the actual salary, it's our salary structure, their benefit costs combined with the library director.
Unfortunately, now you really confuse
okay.
me.
So
why are we using Santa Barbara's benefit structure when we have our own benefit structure?
Because we used the basic percentage of about 32%. So we looked at the salaries and we added about 32% to factor in the cost of the benefits.
Which is a standard calculation when you are trying to allocate what your overhead is.
Okay, so but that's standard whether it's Santa Barbara or whether it's us.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so the reality is it's really us and our salary allocations plus 32% as opposed to Santa Barbara.
There are some differences in the benefits. When we start looking at sliding employees over, it's important to note that the Santa Barbara employees have the option of remaining within Santa Barbara or transferring to the City of Goleta. Mm-hmm. Not all of them. Some of them do, depending on their classification. So those that have the option, there are two that have technically bumping rights. They could stay with the City of Santa Barbara and stay on their side and bump somebody at one of the other branches based on seniority. There are some differences in the benefit structure between the City of Santa Barbara and the City of Goleta, which are important considerations for some employees, but maybe not deciding factors in terms of an employee deciding whether or not they want to transfer or stay within the City of Santa Barbara system. So, for example, our retirement benefit is different than the City of Santa Barbara's. However, we offer different benefits with regard to health insurance and their differences in paid time off. So 32% is the average that we use when we're factoring in the benefit overhead for a position, because that's on average what that is.
Okay. Thank you. I clarified it. I'm done.
All right, we have a couple people in the queue. Councilmember Aceves has been waiting to speak. And then we have our friend from the Goleta Library. Are you going to illuminate after Councilmember Aceves?
Oh, no? Our special counsel,
She's
Julie.
Our legal counsel.
Oh, you are? Okay.
But in case somebody, Mr. Giles or Ms. Grepa asked me to ask, you know, respond to something about.
Are you anxious to get up to the podium?
Not particularly. If you have a specific question, I'm here to answer. I've been working on this project with staff and with Mr. Jobs for the last couple of years, so if you have specific questions about governance and things like that, I'm happy to respond.
Okay. Do you don't happen to know the baseball score, do you?
I know. I'm sorry.
It's 3-0 right. Dodgers.
What is it?
3-0 Dodgers.
Oh, excellent.
I do have some questions, and I'm just trying to understand the overhead and the admin costs. I know the way the City of Santa Barbara does it with their enterprise funds and other departments. As an example, the Motor Pool will buy a police car. It's owned by Motor Pool, but the police part pays rent to Motor Pool for using the car. The airport enterprise zone, if they use HR services in Santa Barbara, they get charged back as other specialties that come out. You said that the overhead was, if I heard you right, was 35%, and the admin is going to 18%. Do we have a breakdown as to what we're paying for that 18% and the 35%?
No, we don't. We have not seen a cost allocation for the administrative fee either at 9% or the proposed 18%. And with regard to the overhead that is in the allocated cost line item, it represented 35% of the overall $214,000. So that's why I reduced it. But we do not have any breakdown as to how either one of those numbers was arrived at.
Sounds like another agreement we have. The question before us has to do with governance. Do we want to have the City of Goleta take it over and be responsible for it and be able to dictate the type of programs we want out of there instead of having a contract where the contractor is telling us, you can do all this except you can't do this, like the children's librarian, which is really important to our community. So this is where our special counsel comes in. I would like to know what we saw it in the PowerPoint, but I want to hear from our council as far as what are our next steps. If we're going to move with local control of our library, what are the next steps, and is it realistic to say that it's not going to happen until July of 2017, or can it happen sooner?
Well, we watch you on television anyway.
Oh, good grief. Okay, well, thank you. Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. I'm Julie Scott. I'm special counsel. I work with the city attorney, Tim Giles, and I've been asked to provide some information on this. The fundamental sort of working rules that we're dealing with here are the Library Act, the State Library Act. The state basically approves the formation of libraries, and they used to fund libraries. They don't have money anymore to send funding out to individual libraries, but they do make grants available from time to time. For example, there was a recent one in the last year It was a pretty large grant for technology services that that was going to be distributed to a number of libraries. But basically, the form of governance that is available to the city is wide open, basically requires one thing, which is state approval. And it is a long process. I've got a chart that I'll kind of walk through with you, but basically there are a variety of different forms, and there's some actions that are needed there are different actions that are needed, and then there's pros and there's cons.
Can I ask a question before you get into the chart?
Sure.
Sorry to interrupt, but it's really important. Is the state looking at creating a new library, or does changing governance, is that a different view from them? Is it easier to change governance than create a new library?
It's the same. The state looks at everything. So the state has, and it's in the laws, it's in the education code. Basically, the state library commission, or the board that runs the state library system, approves everything. They approve every library's annual budget. And they approve joining a system. They approve leaving a system. They approve having to form your own system. So we start with a standalone municipal library. If you were to want that form of governance, you would have to adopt an ordinance creating a municipal library, and it's called that, a municipal library. You would have to appoint and establish a library board of trustees, and you would have to basically cede control of that library to the library board of trustees. They would be the ones who would have the responsibility under state law of governing your municipal library. A municipal library, and this is, again, it's sort of a term of art, a municipal library can only be formed to provide library services within the boundaries of the municipality. So in order to form the municipal library, you would need to adopt an ordinance to form a municipal library, establish and then appoint a board of trustees. The city could still control the budget, but it would be the board of trustees that would actually be the decision makers for all programs and what to do with the money once the city allocated the money. You would have to withdraw from the countywide Santa Barbara Public Library system, which is what you're in right now. You're a branch library of this system. And you would lose your county funding. You would also lose a significant portion, almost half, of the special service area funding, because you would no longer be providing the services to the area surrounding the Goleta Valley area. You can be a municipal library and provide those services to the service area like you're doing right now if the county were to agree to allow you to do that. And that would require an agreement with the county separate from what we have right now. So that's your first option. And like I said, you need to adopt an ordinance and you need to appoint a board of trustees. You have to advise the county no later than 3 months before the beginning of the fiscal year in which this would take effect. And to answer your question about how long all this kind of stuff takes, basically the state library board requires almost a year's notice to do anything, to change anything in the structure of your existing library. So whether you were to withdraw from the county system, form your own municipal library, or change, do one of these other, there's JPAs, there's all kind of stuff that I'll tell you a little bit more quickly. Regardless of what you were to do in terms of how you want to govern your library, any change, joining a system, leaving a system, would require approval by the state. And it takes up to a year. You basically have to let them know in September of the year before July 1st of the next fiscal year that you want to something to go into effect. So they don't like changes. they don't like change. I think anybody who's dealt with them, they don't like quick change. Let's put it that way. They like it, very orderly, which is, we'll allow you to change. It'll be effective in July 1st of a fiscal year. We want to know a year ahead or 9 months ahead. So that's the first, type of library.
If I could, then July is not a good date.
Well, you've already missed the September date to notify the state that you want to, do something different than what you're doing right now. I will note as a caveat, if the city of Goleta wants to stay in the county system, which is kind of what, what you've been looking at, not as a municipal library, and I use that not as a generic city library, but as a quote unquote formal municipal library. If you decided not to go the municipal library route, but you did want to assume control of your library, you no longer want to contract with the city of Santa Barbara to administer your library operations. If you wanted to stay in the county, you can do that too. There's no name for that. That's just a city library that's part of the countywide system. And you would have to, again, negotiate with the county. The county currently has a master agreement with the cities of Santa Barbara, Lompoc, and Santa Maria, which would be a format. It shouldn't be that hard. It's very similar to what the other cities have. But you would still need state approval. And of course, the county would have to agree to the terms. But you could stay basically in place, just take over operations of the city, and then of the library, and then you have to, fund it. But you would presumably still be able to maintain the county funding, the per capita funding, if you're a member of the countywide system like we are now. And you could still, as long as you continue to provide the services to the service area, you'd still get the tax from that. You would have to get state approval. It's not clear if all you're doing is you're taking over operations from Santa Barbara. If they require the full year, you'd have to ask them. There's holes in this. This Library Act was enacted back in the 40s and 50s and maybe even before that. And so, there's kind of holes for this exact situation where Goleta became a city, assumed ownership of the library building, and then maintained their membership in the countywide system at the same time. So, there's nothing specifically that addresses that, but we would ask, you would want to ask the state, and they could tell you if they want to take a whole year to do that. There's a special library district that can be formed. Again, that's another form of library. Some cities have that. And it's, it's its own taxation district and so forth. That requires a petition from the city to the county. The county has to have an election. They control everything at that point. It can be carved out of any area. They not only control the process, they select the board of trustees. So if you want more control, that's not, something that you would probably want because of the fact that you would end up with no control. It would be completely within the county control. And again, it would have to be an election, have to be approved and all that stuff. There's other systems with throughout the state that have joint powers agreements. They also have community facilities district. The point is you can model on another system, for example, a JPA, joint powers agreement, where you enter into an agreement with, say, other cities in Santa Barbara County. And this is just all hypothetical because obviously it hasn't been discussed. But then you could also, as a JPA, you could have your own area, or you could join the countywide system as your own joint powers authority. There are a couple of Northern California systems where they kind of, mix and match. So I'll give you an example. Santa Cruz has a city and county library system, and it's a joint powers authority. There is a joint powers agreement between the city of Santa Cruz, the county of Santa Cruz, and two other cities. They exercise joint powers over library services. They had a specific measure that approved a special tax for library services for their JPA. They have an MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, that outlines all the responsibilities of the JPA. Interestingly, they also have the staffing issue that Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo was talking about. Every library has their own library director. Even where they have a JPA, a Joint Powers Authority, each of the libraries, each of the cities has their own library director. It's a difficult thing to share an employee between cities, regardless of whether it's for library or other. I've had this experience with police, with a helicopter, big helicopter unit between a couple of cities, and it all, you know, who does the evaluations, who actually, you know, evaluates the performance. It's a, you know, there are management issues that can make it a really difficult thing to do. Not that it can't be done, but that's probably something the state would insist on. So in terms of whether or not you'd be able to share a library director, you'd really have to sort of figure out what kind of governance structure you want, first of all, and then, you know, how you're going to implement it, and then see if the state would approve it that way. So the cart and the horse in this case, well, I'm not sure which is which. I never know which. But the horse comes first, I guess, pulling the cart. But you really need to sort of settle on what kind of a governance structure you want. Probably the fastest way to do it would be to take over operations from the city of Santa Barbara, maintain everything else the same, the service area the same. You'd have to negotiate this agreement with the county, and then you'd have to get the state approval. That would probably be, if you're just looking at timing, and even then, there's no guarantees. Somebody has to talk to state and say, you know, are you going to hold us to this schedule where we have to notify you in September of any kind of change? All we're doing is changing managers at this point. So that's kind of it.
Okay. Now, Ms. Green, did you say it, or was it Ms. Trepa who said that the county would like to see us continue with the Zone 1, right? They would like to see us
Neither
continue.
Of us said that, but what they said was they were open to us remaining a branch of the system, or if we wanted to go forward as a municipal library, working with us on how that process would work and entering into an agreement dealing with the revenue, the Measure L revenue and the county per capita revenue. But what I did say was the question of, in any scenario, what that service area would be has to be looked at. And out of that discussion came the question of, would we need to establish a new zone to accommodate Goleta's service area if we're operating the library directly under either scenario? And they didn't have the answer at the time, and we're going to consult with county council as we've consulted with special legal counsel.
Okay, now what about the county appointing the board of trustees? That, I don't see the logic in that.
Special legal counsel was referring to if the city goes forward to form a city municipal library, that the city would be subject to the state rules, which would require the city council to create a board of trustees and appoint members to it. That's in state law. So that would apply to the county and not the, pardon me, to the city and not the county.
Oh, so we still appoint our own board?
Yes, if you do choose to go down the municipal library route.
All right, thank you. Councilmember Aceves.
If we just contracted with the county, as the city of Santa Barbara does, then that would just be agreement between us and the county, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So would that still need to go to the, you need to come up here so you
I'm
can,
sorry.
So if we just contracted with the city, that's just, or with the county, then that's just between us. And that would help us keep the unincorporated area funding base.
Yeah, now, if you just took over, like now, right now the city of Santa Barbara runs your library. If the city of Goleta took over running the library, you would still need an agreement with the county. But as long as you provided the same services, the same service area, you know, there wouldn't be it would be almost as if you just are stepping into the shoes of the city of Santa Barbara, if that's what you wanted to do.
And then that would still need to go to the state for their approval.
The state has to approve everything. They have to approve your annual budget every year.
But it seems to me and that would be a quicker process than creating a whole new structure.
That's probably the quickest process.
Okay.
If you wanted to do a municipal library, you know, it doesn't take too long to put an ordinance on the agenda and to adopt an ordinance and appoint a board of trustees for your board of library trustees. The next step would still be, you'd still have to go negotiate with the county, because once you're a municipal library, you have to have a contract with the county to provide services beyond your municipal boundaries, if you want to do that. If you don't want any county money, you want just a standalone municipal library, then you don't need any agreement with the county. But the belonging to a countywide system means that you get county per capita funding, and then you've also got this special district, so you would only get a proportional share of those funds if you were just to provide library services to the city of Goleta within the boundaries of the city.
Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo.
So if we just change management, if we take over, so we'll still have a zone or whatever we want to call it of 90,000 people, give or take, 35,000 of them are our residents. So would we... Even though the majority of these users of the library are outside the city, we'd still be in charge. We'd still be autonomous. The county wouldn't be able to step in and say, well, we want you to do this because 2/3 of these people are our residents.
No, the county agreements typically don't provide for management. Okay. They don't involve that. You would still have to have an agreement with the county. Because you would still want to be, I'm assuming, unless you want to be a standalone municipal library. Mm. If you want county funding, you got to be part of their system.
Right, and I'm just saying, even if we do that, we're in charge of the library, though. I mean, the county's right. Not going to step right. In and want to help manage it or anything.
No,
like
no,
that.
That's not been their typical agreements. Okay. It's more of an overall structure for funding and.
That's correct, and they have made it clear that they're not interested in assuming any kind of management role with any
right.
of the branch libraries,
okay.
including Goleta. It's also important to note that the service area is different from the zone. So that's...
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah. The zone includes, at this point, City of Santa Barbara and all of the branches that it manages from... Carpinteria, all the way to Bealton and Solvang. So
the zone's everything. Our service area is just the area we...
Right.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure I understand how they came up with those zones, if you look at them, because the zone one, which we're in, is three times the size of the other two zones.
Okay.
So I don't understand why that would even become an issue for them, especially if the city... And, you know, we'd have to... hear back from them, I guess. I don't know what the legal issue is that
right.
they wanted to ask county council about, because I don't see it as a legal issue. It's more of a, let's just keep everything the same. If you, the city, are keeping everything the same, there's no reason why they would need to change a zone.
The question becomes, if you have one zone and two libraries that are responsible for providing service to one or more branches, and you have two library directors in that zone, who becomes zone administrator
right.
on behalf of the
yeah.
county?
Okay.
So that's where there needs to be more exploration on what should the relationships be and what would work.
Right.
And nobody's ever thought of this question yet in our county, so it's not an easy answer to point to.
Right. But I don't think it's a legal
right.
Issue. I mean, they asked their county council, but it's more of a policy issue for them. And I mean, I can see them wanting to just do as little disruption as possible. Sure. That's just one more thing they would have to do. But I agree, there would be, like I said, this is not something that fits within the structure of the Library Act. This having a city that becomes a city after the library is already there and so forth. So we've got to kind of get everybody in the same room. You know, everybody's kind of got to be on board and talk through these issues. And it's more of a logistics, I think, more than anything else. Once you guys decide what kind of governing structure you want, which is completely up to you.
I think it may relate to the allocation of the per capita proceeds, because right now the county allocates the per capita to the City of Santa Barbara as the Zone 1 administrator, and then the City of Santa Barbara determines the service areas and then allocates that money out to the branch libraries based on a service area that they determine. So if we have two administrators within Zone 1, the county then would be responsible for divvying up that money between the two administrators, as opposed to it all going to the City of Santa Barbara and then coming to us. So I think it's just to keep clean accounting lines with regard to the allocation of per capita.
Yeah, but I mean, it's still based on population, and the state gives the county the numbers,
right?
Or the based on the census. So it's there is a sort of a, you know, they work together, but the state gives the county the numbers, and then the county determines the per capita funding. Right now, City of Santa Barbara does that allocation,
for the allocation for the branch library.
But if we're no longer, if we meaning Goleta, I say we, is no longer a branch library, but is a standalone city library, which you would flush out in your agreement with the county. That's what you call it, or a municipal library if you want to do it that way. Then, you know, they would just have to decide. I'm not sure it's so much a legal issue as it is just, oh, we've never done this before, so let's figure out how we're going to do it, the best way to do it.
Councilmember Bennett.
Okay. I'd like to bring us back to where we asked staff to bring us back to, and we've kind of gone a little bit of a field here, but I'd like to read something to you that's in the staff report. On page 1, down at the bottom, it says, at the July 19th meeting, council provided the following direction to staff. And on page 2, at the top of it, it says, establish a discussion with the City of Santa Barbara and the County of Santa Barbara for a process whereby the City of Goleta may assume direct management of the Goleta Library while maintaining Measure L and county per capita funding for the library. We already made that decision. That was the direction we gave staff to come back and please provide this to us. It's in the staff report. So the discussion about all the other issues is interesting. We actually had that 2 years ago once we secured the services of our legal counsel and also the consultant who went through and explained all those challenges back then. And we established the direction we were going to go, and we blew that up in June when we found out that the law applies differently in the unincorporated area for funding than it does within the city municipal boundaries. And that's what blew up the approach that we were trying to use to go forward first with a funding mechanism and then fix the library. Now we don't have access to the funding system per se of changing it. Now we're going back to change the management. And I'm just suggesting to you, we already gave all the directions to staff that were necessary, in my mind, to come this evening with the information that we need to make a decision tonight to say that we want to go forward essentially with the status quo, but with us managing the library. And I think from what I've heard from most people, that's what they've said they would like to support. So I don't think there's any mystery here, and I guess maybe I'm just a little frustrated at this point.
No, I think you're right on target there. Okay. You have a comment?
I haven't had anything to say yet. Every time, you know, Councilmember Bennett and I have been on the ad hoc committee for quite a while. Councilmember Bennett has been dealing with our library a lot longer than I have, but every time we talk about this, I learn something new. So, you know, I feel like there's it's such a, you know, a concept that's so intriguing to me is to take over the library. But I'm still kind of feeling like there's some unanswered questions. Maybe it's as far as, well, I guess we need to decide municipal library or do we do the join the county and have our own. I'm confused on that. And then also my question was the Black Gold Cooperative. If we, does that in any way change with one or the other of our, what we talked about tonight, the municipal library or being our own city library with the county? Is that?
I think the key for us was to make sure that the council understood that there was a general fund impact to running the library. And based on the assumptions that we've put before you, regardless now with the 18% fee that the city of Santa Barbara has indicated they'll be charging anyway, there's potentially going to be an impact to maintain the same service level. So based on the previous conversations, there really hadn't been a commitment on the part of the city of Goleta to fund the operating deficit. And so I think that was a very important point to make. With regard to Black Gold, we would have to apply for membership in Black Gold regardless as to what management structure we take. They still would need to approve that. If we wanted to become a member of Black Gold, we would still have to apply.
And do we know how long that takes? Is that sorry.
Their bylaws have a provision there that says that anybody who applies for membership has to follow the rules established by the governing committee. And we asked them if they had any rules, and they said no. And then we asked them if they'd had anybody join in, you know, forever. And they said no, but they've had some people leave.
Withdraw.
So, so it's, you know, it's just as mysterious as the State Library Board in terms of what the criteria are. I would note, as Kathleen noted, that all of the members have library directors, and I could see them saying, we really want, if you want to be a member, I just can't imagine that they would want a different structure, governing, you know, management structure than that, but you never know. So we have to get, you know, get the county to the negotiating table regardless. If anything that we want to change, we have to get state approval. And if we want to join Black Gold, which we would have to apply now because right now our membership is through the city of Santa Barbara. I don't know, I won't speak for Santa Barbara, whether they would still want to sort of funnel that. But I can't, that just sounds awkward to me. You know, you want things to be cleanly, you know, where you can put them in a little box and say, this is what we do, this is what we have. And so forth. So, yeah, we'd have to just ask them and see.
Okay. I think the key is that regardless as to whether it's a municipal library or a city department that we contract directly with the county of Santa Barbara, I don't think the issue is as much taking over direct control of the library, because that's certainly possible and that's the council's desire. I think from our perspective, it was important that the council understood that there was an ongoing general fund commitment to maintain those service levels. We can certainly come back with a more delineated path if that's if everybody's prepared to provide that direction, and then come back with some really defined options and some timelines and work towards taking over the library.
As far as expenditures, when earlier you had said that it's a very lean operation over there, and so I would think that we were going to increase. I would think that if we took over, we'd be increasing the amount of people. So, did you take that into consideration, the full-time or part-time?
No, I did not. So we did not. We have not. We maintained the current staffing structure and just added the library director. We did not change any of the staffing as part of this calculation.
And then the other thing I just wanted to address, Councilmember Bennett's question about janitorial service, because I remember when that conversation came up. And how I remember it is that it would be a lot different than, I mean, it would library sees a lot more people than City Hall on a daily basis, where we have our custodial service 2 days a week, I believe. Is that correct?
It's 3 days
three.
A week.
3 days, where I think they have it every day. They just have more people coming and going. So that's really basically all I had to say at that point.
All right. Well, we're coming to the moment of truth. Ms. Kistler, Pat Kistler would like a word.
Just a touch. Thank you for going through all this. This takes a lot of time, and I know your friends of the library are kind of sitting in their seats waiting to hear from you. They love the library. They spend hours and hours there. They fundraise for it, and we're kind of on the border of making a huge decision that will really affect the service, and that's really what they want. And just doing right by the folks in Goleta. And, of course, the children's librarian would be icing on the cake. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, Ms. Perotti.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That's another question. During all this transition, whatever we come up with and decide, how do we move forward with the children's librarian? Is that somewhat something that we can contract? I mean, how they're not in favor of hiring a librarian now until they know exactly what's happening, and then they don't want us to hire one, so do we contract that out? How does that work?
Well, the two options would be we could look at finding someone who would provide that service under contract in the interim period, or if council, if staff is able to verify what target date we can meet with moving forward with taking over the services, then we could start the recruitment for that position and for the library director sooner, so that by the time we take over, those positions are ready to be in place. I know council did have a desire to have the position filled as soon as possible, and certainly before the next summer reading program kicks off. So I think it would be prudent to look at both options and find out more about what is possible before we say to council what options you definitely have. So, you know, I think at this point, what we do know for certain is that the timing's going to be critical related to any of the staff that we either hire directly or transition from City of Santa Barbara to City of Goleta, and we'll need to focus very early in the process on how that's going to work so it doesn't become a stumbling block toward the end of the process. So certainly we would be moving quickly to look at how our City of Goleta library classifications would be drafted, bring those to council for approval, update our salary and classification plan, start recruitment. So, you know, the ball is rolling so that on the day that we take over operations, if we're going that way, we have a facility with staff ready to serve the public. And so we don't have any vacancies that would hamper our ability to provide that service.
Thank you.
Okay. Did you want to say more?
Well, I'm prepared to make a motion to
minute.
We can get going on this.
Yeah, thing. No, I'm fully sympathetic to that. But I thought we should have give someone the opportunity to say anything to sway your colleagues if you think it's necessary. Otherwise, we can just wade right into it and vote.
Well, let's have a motion and let's debate the motion.
Okay. Please.
Okay, taking it out of the PowerPoint where it said next steps to assume management. So if we can put that up on the screen, that's where I'm going. So I'd like to make a motion to direct staff to confirm management and governance structure, extend the agreement with the City of Santa Barbara to 7/1/16. It would actually be 6/30, I believe, 17, technically anyway. Apply to the state for approval. Direct staff to create a library classification and compensation schedule. Begin recruitment for a library director and children's library so they're ready to go on board on 7/1/17. develop an operating budget as a part of the 17-19 budget cycle, and plan for the overall transition effective 7-1-17, and that we apply to Black Gold to become a participant with that particular organization. That's my motion.
Did the motion include contracting with the county for the services?
That's in the number one bullet up there, direct staff to confirm management and governance structure. That is what we're doing. We've done already, actually, with the county, and that would be a part of that process to accomplish that.
I'll second the motion.
I'll have to, who would like to comment first?
I'll go. I'm kind of like going where Councilman Bennett was earlier as far as this is what we asked for last time we met. I would hope that there'd be no further delay, that staff would come back with and get the process started and keep our library committee updated that we're moving forward. I think this is what our people, our constituents want. And I see this is the only option. I don't see the option of paying the city of Santa Barbara such an exorbitant administrative fee that we're going to absorb and move forward. So I'm fully in support of the motion.
Anybody else like to comment?
Okay. Just briefly, I would say I agree too. I think the city of Santa Barbara's made it pretty clear they don't want to manage our library anymore. Not many people raise you, double your fee and expect you to come back. And that's fine. That's not a critique of City of Santa Barbara. They obviously don't want to do it. And so I prefer to have the control here in the city. I think it's something we've talked about a long time, and it's the most cost-effective way to go as well. So I think this is a great idea. I think we need to, but I'm with everybody else. We need to expedite this and get it done so the residents of Goleta have some reassurance that we're going to make sure this library continues to operate at its current level, and we're going to make sure here in the city that that's what happens.
May I add one thing? I'm sorry, sure. Just one thing. The important thing is that we're not changing the operation. If you look at the staff report, one of the PowerPoints, we have more circulation than Lompoc, more circulation than Santa Maria. In fact, we almost have both their numbers combined. We're at 596,000. Lompoc's 237,000, and Santa Maria's at 392,000. This is a highly utilized library. So I think the public needs to know that we're not changing the operation. We're just changing the governance.
All right. And what I'm hoping is after we vote on this, assuming we have an agreement here, is that when the state sees how clean this is, they won't take a full year to approve it. And maybe we can get by July 17. Okay, well, we have a motion and a second on the floor here. Let's take a vote. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes unanimously. Okay,
can we take just a real quick break?
Yeah, sure we can. Let's take till 7:45. And let's start with Ms. Perotti here. Well, let's mix it up a little.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good thing I have my list of what I did in the last few weeks. October the 5th, we had Bow Wow Wednesday, bike or walk to school at Brandon School. And I have to say, I think I've probably mentioned it to Councilmember Bennett already, and Councilmember Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo was there with me, and also Sergeant Sorensen. And then I think also Deputy Farmer was there as well. But the kids all missed you and all your bag of, they were asking. And then we ran out of everything, didn't we?
We right
ran out of every single thing. I think there were over 250, 260?
It was over half the kids that go to the school. It was a great turnout.
Yeah, it was great. So that was fun as usual, but I just have to tell you, you were missed. October 5th and 12th, every Wednesday, I continue to meet with the C3H, Central Coast Collaborative on Homelessness, at the Marketplace, the regional committee. Let's see. Oh, October the 6th, we at the Bacara, we had the 2016 legislative summit. That was really well done. Let's see. October the 11th, we had along with the mayor, Energy and Green Issues Committee, talked about bike sharing. Mostly was the conversation was bike sharing, and I think, you know, there's still some work that needs to be done, but it was a great presentation, and I really liked the concept, and we're looking at maybe doing something on a regional basis, but there's a lot more information that has to be gathered first. We had on October the 12th, the Villages at Los Caneros People Self-Help had their groundbreaking ribbon cutting. It was a really nice celebration. And then October the 13th, Councilmember Bennett and myself, we were at the Coast's annual fall gathering, where they awarded Kent Epperson with the Barry Siegel Award, and the City of Goleta presented him with a certificate of recognition, and that was very well attended. And then yesterday, I, along with Councilmember Bennett, we were at the Central Coast Sustainability Summit at UCSB. It was an all-day event. And I mean, if anybody wants to look at any of the information I have, I'd share it. But the keynote speakers were fabulous. All the breakout sessions were really quite incredible. I took one on... what was the name of it now? But it was basically on bike sharing, and Scott Spaulding was there on talking about... Councilmember Bennett, you're going to have to help me on this one. Data gathering via your phone, gathering exactly where traffic patterns are going, and into the future, looking at our cell phones for that information. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
And I have to say, the one breakout session that was really incredible was on water and the drought. And we had speakers from the county, we had speakers from the City of Goleta and the City of Santa Barbara, and they did a lot of visual presentation on Lake Kachuma, and they showed some pictures that you wouldn't be able to see even from the road. So it was just incredible to see how low Lake Kachuma is. But they were optimistic that we were going to get through this, but we're going to have to look at the new normal. It's not going to be normal as usual. So that was really incredible. So I'm really glad I went. It was a long day, but I'm glad I went. I do have, see if I have support for asking about, recently we had a situation in the western end of Goleta with gas, what was it, H2S, hydrogen sulfide. Leak. I was not at home on Sunday but people were calling me about it. And then I was home Monday and I smelt it. It was pretty bad. So I'm thinking that maybe I know that our staff will be meeting with a lot of the different agencies, and I think that's going to be great. And I would like to know if we could come back, if we can have some kind of a presentation on moving forward, things that we learned from this experience, and how might we handle it a little bit differently, and what you all learned by talking with all the agencies. I think some kind of a presentation would be really helpful for our residents to hear, because I think they would like to hear some reassurance that moving down the road, that this might be looked at a little differently.
Okay, well, I'll second that if I can. And that kind of raises the question. The Venico did not want to reestablish their, I don't know what the term would be, the machine that detects leaks. And the city of Goleta opposed that, right?
They asked for an extension because the location where they have had a monitoring station set up is no longer available to them. It's on other property. And over the last year, while the facility's been shut down, they had an exemption for not having that in place. They asked for a continuance of that exemption, and at the city's request, we did request that that exemption be no longer than while the facility was not in operation. It's not a matter of Venico not wanting to reestablish it. They're needing to find a suitable alternative location since they've lost the lease at the location that they did have the monitoring facility.
All right. Well, that's reassuring to hear. Have you heard anything about Plains and Cell American when they might get that thing up and running?
We have not. We've not received any official notice on that. We're still waiting for the regulators to give clearance on that and direction as to what kind of remediation would be acceptable before they would authorize any kind of resumption of that pipeline.
Yeah. Okay. Councilmember Bennett, do you want to tell us what you've been up to?
Sure. I'd be happy to do that. Well, if you recall, we met last. It was a Monday because the League of Cities annual conference was beginning on that week. And so I did attend the conference. And as always, conferences, I find it to be meaningful, and you always pick up pieces of information. And that was certainly no exception in this particular case. And the keynote speaker that we had on Wednesday, of course, was always informational, motivating, and it was very similar to the Love of Cities presentation that we had a number of years ago when many of us were attending the League of Cities conference. A little different twist this time around, but nonetheless, there's some interesting ideas there that I jotted down and may at some point bring back to think about. And then on Thursday, I went to Succession, the Achilles heel of city governments, and that was again very interesting, and it was probably very timely in the scheme of things and things that go on within city governments, and about how other people can take over and how you fill the slots, et cetera, and things you should be looking for. And then we had another keynote speaker after that session in the morning, dealing with California and the economy of California. And that was done by Beacon Economics, Mr. Thornburg, one of the principals. And it was fascinating, absolutely fascinating. He blew out a bunch of myths and suggested that California was doing just fine, not that it can't improve, but it's doing just fine. And that he gave all these indicators as to why we're doing fine, and contrary to those that wring their hands and those from outside the state that continue to say that we're bad and they're good, he blew all that up, and I was pretty impressed on his revelation. I wish I had something in writing. I think I can go online and pick up maybe his presentation. I'm not sure about that. They did that for the classes, but I didn't check to see if they did that for the keynote speakers or not yet. But I will do some further follow-up. So that was pretty stimulating, I have to say. So I enjoyed that. I'm not going to go through all the things that I attended, but I thought that I would touch on those that might be of some interest. Hot topics in municipal revenues and budgeting and finance. And then talking about the reducing of pension and OPEB costs, which I don't think there was any new news there for me anyway, but they're pretty much staying with the line of thought over the last couple of years in that regard. And then I went to a dinner that evening that was very enjoyable. And then
was that a date?
Beg your pardon?
Was that a date?
No, it was not. It was not. And then on Friday, I went to mergers and sharing of personnel. What is the city to do? Interesting on that conversation, and not particularly a lot of support from the audience. Certainly the presenters were thinking that that might be a great idea. Didn't seem to be well received with a whole lot of reasoning as to why that doesn't work. Many of them had tried it and were unsuccessful and had disasters as a result of it. So it was an interesting, that was one of the more interesting issues that was brought up. And then I attended the noontime business meeting, as I was directed by council to do. And if you recall, that direction was to support Vision Zero, which I did. I thought it was going to go rather simply. It didn't quite go so simply. There were some that were not particularly happy about it. I think they misinterpreted what the issue and proposal was, because it was purely advisory. It wasn't mandating the league to go promote legislation or get a legislator to carry anything. It was merely a advisory to have communities think about this when they go forward with their designs and so on. And that so it ultimately passed. It and I would say it was overwhelmingly passed, but there were certainly, I'm giving due to those that were not in support, and they expressed their fact that they weren't supportive of it. So anyway, I just bring that to you. And that was the end of the conference. And then moving on, starting the week when I was home, we had a Fire Station 10 ad hoc committee meeting on Monday. On Tuesday, Council Member Aceves and myself carpooled up to the jail groundbreaking up in Santa Maria. And then I also attended, along with others on council, the groundbreaking for the self-help project, bringing us 70 affordable units at the Villages at Los Caneros, and also attended the Coast Fall Gathering that is put on every fall. So I guess that's why they call it the Fall Gathering.
Yeah, we do it.
In any case, then also attended yesterday's Sustainability Summit. And I could only stay for the first presentation, which was on transportation. And that's a very pertinent subject for us here in the South County. And talked a lot about different modes of transportation, bicycles, automatic systems with bicycles that you can take and rent and return and so on. And that's becoming more successful in densely populated areas. It's been a little less successful in areas outside that are not quite so dense. So that process, and I think as it gets to be better known and better understood, will be more successful over time. Talked about buses, talked about a pass that's good for everything, whether it be good for a bike to rent or whether it is good to get on a bus or if it's good to get on the train. So this time around, there wasn't a lot of emphasis on the train. It was more in passing than as a item to go forward. One of the major issues that I got a kick out of, and I was aware of it because I sit on SBCAG, but because of presentations, but that the presenters let the audience know that Big Brother is, in fact, alive and well. And I've known this for years, and I know people are concerned about their privacy, but that went away a long time ago. And so as a result of what I'm speaking about, when you have your phone and you've got it pinging your location, they're able to determine where you're commuting from and what you do. And so they have some pretty accurate information today as to those that are commuting from the North County and from Ventura County, and not only from that general direction, but from each of the respective cities and areas. So the information is becoming far more accurate as to how people are traveling, and they broke it out between those that travel to Santa Barbara and those that traveled to Goleta from each of those locations. So I think it was informative to many people that are probably not aware that this exists and that it's being used as a in a positive way to direct how transportation resources will be used in the future and the things that we need to do to help eliminate some of the congestion and some of the impacts that we know of that occur in all of our communities. So I thought it was really nice, a nice open, eye-opener, and providing that general information. I could tell that in just hearing people from behind me that there were some surprises in regards to where they're getting the information and how it's coming about. But it is happening, and it is being used. So as I say, however, in this instance, it's being used in a very positive way. That concludes my report.
All right. Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo.
Okay. Well, as already has been mentioned, we had our fire committee meeting, which Councilman Bennett and I attended, and then the Brandon Bow Wow event, which it's just fun to say Bow Wow for that matter. But I thought that was a great event. The EASAs, I believe, I hope I got that name right, it really helped coordinate that, and the school does a great job, and like literally more than half the kids walked or biked to school that day, so that's great. I mean, when I was a kid, that's what we all did, but it's neat to see that happen again, and hopefully it continues to happen, and we're going to have to bring more stuff next year.
I've got a big bag
already. All right, that's good. We may need more if they keep it up. I mean, everybody ran out. Yeah, we'll figure it out, but it was a lot of fun. Councilman Aceves and I both went to the Hispanic Heritage Night at UCSB, so we got to go out on the field, and I never did get my autographed soccer ball, though, did you?
Not yet.
Wait a minute. But that was fun. And then we got to hang out for the game, and it was a good night. And so that was good. I went to the Issue and Policy Roundtable the Chamber had this month, which was a candidate forum for the Water District. And so all five candidates were there. I thought they all acquitted themselves well. There's a lot of people running for those three seats, so that should be interesting. I didn't do a whole lot because, as many of you may know, tax season ended last night. If you extended your personal return, last night was so. If I look tired, it's because I am. Thank you again, city staff, for scheduling an all-day council meeting the day after tax season ends. It's fine. I'm kidding. But we did have, you know, I just joined the evening Rotary, and we did have a fireworks meeting last week. We're going forward with the fireworks again with the afternoon Rotary. It's the process starts now, believe it or not, for the July event, I'm new to it, but I'm impressed with the amount of volunteer effort it goes into holding this really great community event. And so the ball is already rolling; they're getting ready. They've got a lot of experience in both Rotary clubs, and it should be really great again, as usual, for the 4th of July next year. This weekend, I know there's the DP homecoming events. But there's also a major fundraiser for Special Olympics on Saturday down in Santa Barbara. It's a dinner they do where the fire department serves, but they don't do the cooking, but they come out to serve, which is great because everybody likes firemen. Not retired firemen, but, you know, current firemen. No, everybody loves firemen. So it's a big fundraiser. I know it's a conflict with what's going on because on top of that, the Boys Club is having its annual fall gala tomorrow, Saturday night as well. So Saturday night's a busy night. That's a big fundraiser for the Boys and Girls Club. It's at Deckers again. I think it's at Deckers.
Yes,
thank you. It's at Deckers. I hope I've got to figure that out because I'm going. So, you know, if you're inclined to go out Saturday evening and help raise some money for a lot of different organizations, there's plenty of opportunities. I don't know if you can get to two, but at least get to one. Let's put it that way. So it should be a fun weekend, though. And that's all I have.
All right, thank you. Council Member Aceves.
Thank you. Well, mostly everybody spoke about stuff that I did. Let me try out a few different things here. I missed everybody at the Fiddler's Convention on the 9th. My wife and I volunteered, and it's amazing this Fiddler's group, let's put it that way. They have buttons that they get for every Fiddler's Convention. And they come wearing all their buttons, and some are quite old. Now, I don't know if you know the history of this Fiddler's Convention, but it was originally held on the campus of UCSB. And then it was moved to Stowe House, and it's become quite a fixture. And the Historical Society does a wonderful job in putting it out. And it's amazing the people that showed up. I mean, from all walks of life. So that was a lot of fun. And then on the 10th, was it the 10th? Councilman Bennett and I were in the Solid Waste Issues Committee. Forgot to mention that one.
Yeah.
And we got to talk about the Draft Resource Recovery Project Materials Delivery Commitment and Processing Services Agreement. So that'll be coming before councils once it makes its rounds. But that was an interesting meeting. North Branch Jail, that's quite exciting for North County in that they won't have to travel all the way down here with their prisoners, but also it'll hopefully eliminate some of the stress in our Goleta facility. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, this won't be built until 18.
Yeah, they'll finish construction at the very end of 2018. They expect to make it operational no later than July 1st of 2019.
So it's exciting. It's long overdue. And it's on Black Road, for those of you who know the San Maria or the Orchid area. Village of Los Caneros, that was quite a turnout. And for the public's information, well, first of all, I got the chance to speak because the mayor and Mayor Pro Tem couldn't go. But it's important to note that the project, which is across the street at Village of Los Caneros, was only it's only happening now because the first council had the vision to change the zoning from commercial industrial commercial to housing, and that allows the people's self-help to go there. But to do that, the first council had to entertain zoning changes, general plan changes to make it fit, and now you see that it's going to be a great facility. They have, correct me, I think it's 9 acres devoted just to people's self-help, and it's right on the corner, big piece of property. So looking forward to that moving forward. And then next week, our local LAFCO agency, the San Mauro LAFCO, is hosting our Cal LAFCO conference, and it's going to be down at the Red Lion. And so we'll have commissioners from all over the state coming to Santa Barbara, and a lot of good classes and presentation, so I'm looking forward to that.
You just dated yourself with the Red Lion. It's now the DoubleTree.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's actually the DoubleTree at Hilton now. Yeah, it's at the Hilton. Yeah, I did date myself.
I
remember when Fess Parker was there. So.
Yeah.
All right, that's my report. Thank you.
All right, thank you. I have a brief report. We had the sustainability committee. We had a presentation from people who do a rideshare deal with bicycles, and they were throwing out some rather scary numbers as to how much it would take to institute it. And Paul and I are thinking, well, I don't think I'm going to bring that back to the council. I mean, hundreds of thousands. But you had to find sponsors, so I think they should have sold that a little differently than they did. I saw an article in the LA Times about ride sharing. They said it seems to be more successful in the East Coast. Wouldn't that have something to do with density, I think? They said in Los Angeles it's not as well supported as it is in the East. So I had a meeting, the Mayor Pro Tem and I had a meeting with Jimmy Joe Navarro and another member of the local Chumash tribe to talk to him about what might come to pass out there by Stowe House, and there's still a lot of legwork to do on that, but the vision is still there, and hopefully we can bring that further down the road. There are some things that I'm sorry I missed, particularly the people's self-help housing. It's pretty hard for me to get around still, but I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I was taking my driver's license test. Well, I passed it, so I'm actually on the road. So I just wanted to warn you.
Can you give me a 5-minute head start?
Yeah. Well, they make me drive with a flashing yellow light on the roof.
We'll know you're coming. Okay.
Yeah, no, anyway. So that's it for me. Ms. Green, would you like to tell us something about what you've been doing?
I wanted to point out two items that are coming up shortly. Tomorrow, the State Lands Commission will be meeting here in council chambers and conducting two hearings, one at 3 p.m. and one at 6 p.m. regarding the EIR for Venico's lease line adjustment application. And then on Saturday, the Santa Barbara Century, which is a bike race, will be coming through Goleta. So we'll see the impacts of that. They have gone through our special event permit process, so everything should be in order for that. But if there's an unusually large number of cyclists in the area, that's the reason. And that's all I have.
All right. What about the rally?
Yeah, there is a group that will conduct a rally prior to the State Lands Commission hearing tomorrow afternoon, both in front of our council chambers and then also in front of the main doors to City Hall.
It's interesting. We haven't had much of that out this way, I don't think. Mr. Giles, do you have a report?
No.
All right. Well, thank you. I think we have pretty much done what we need to do. So let's slam this down, and we shall adjourn the evening session of the Goleta City Council.